Good evening, everyone. Glad to see you here, and thanks for being here. At this time, I call the Aiken City Council meeting to order, September 14, 2015. We do have several guidelines I want to mention, and first is you may speak on any item on the agenda. The council does ask that you hold your comments to 5 minutes or less. If you want to speak, please come to the podium and state your name and address. And please note that the clock up there will help you with the five-minute time period. Now, there are times, of course, that we go over that, and that's fine with special presentations, or city council wants to ask questions, talk with the speakers, that's fine. But please try to adhere to this as much as you can, because it helps us to move forward, and hopefully you can get everything you want to say in 5 minutes or so. So we appreciate that very much. At this time, we will have our invocation and our pledge of allegiance.
Our Heavenly Father, we are ever mindful of your presence. Be with us tonight as we seek to serve the residents of our city to your will. Remind us that when we ran for our office, we did so to improve the quality of life for our citizens and the businesses which provide goods and services to them. Guide us to the best use of the limited resources we have. Bless all who serve our city, especially those in harm's way, our police and fire officers exposed to the dangers of their profession. Bless also the members of this council, our staff, and the citizens we serve. We ask these things in your name. Amen.
The pledge of allegiance
to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Council, do we have any deletions or additions to the agenda necessary this evening? Not seeing any, hearing any. We'll move to minutes. Consideration of the minutes of the August 3rd, 2015 work session and August 10, 2015 executive session and the regular meeting minutes. Do we have a motion and a second for approval?
I so move.
Second.
Any discussion?
Yes, Mr. Mayor. Okay. As the information tonight unfolds on Jim Lakes and in the future, I would like to reserve the right to come back to a couple of pages, mainly in 40 and 41 later on if necessary, just so I have that on the record if we have to look back at the minutes for the previous meetings. That's the only comment.
Okay, sir.
Come back to 40 and 41?
It's page 40 and 41 of the agenda.
Agenda or the minutes?
It's in the minutes, but it's page 40 of 239.
Oh, okay.
And there's other pages. There's other pages in there, too, that we may need to refer back to as we go down the road.
Okay, very good. We have a couple of presentations. The first one is a proclamation.
Let's go to the vote.
Pardon me. Show of hands, please. All in favor? Passes unanimously. Item 1, proclamation proclaiming Aiken Symphony Orchestra Week in April. And if Dave Tavernier will come up and meet me over here, please.
Yes, sir.
We thank you for being here. This is a wonderful thing that you have going.
It is, and it's only been within a year that Aiken Symphony Orchestra went from just an idea to reality. And here we are only 3 days away from the debut performance coming up here at Ethridge Center. And this proclamation that council and the mayor is so generous to give is an underscore, and it represents, I think, a big vote of support for what we have found so far, the community, to be very accepting of.
Absolutely. I'm proud of it. I'm proud of the community for this. Did you want to get your son here?
No. I wanted to introduce M. Ligon, who is president of the Aiken Symphony Guild, but apparently she was. There she is. When did you sneak in? Come on up. I'm president of the organizing committee for the Symphony Orchestra, and M is president of the Symphony Guild. She, her organization and the committee have worked very closely together over the past year, and it's through that cooperative effort that we now have the reality of Aiken's own Symphony Orchestra.
Well, the council is very happy and pleased to be able to present this proclamation, and we'll do it again on Thursday. Whereas the citizens of Aiken who have given their support and embrace the various art forms through generosity and engagement have never before possessed a symphonic orchestra of their own. Whereas it is recognized that a hometown symphonic orchestra would enhance Aiken's quality of life and provide a significant impact on building a better community. And whereas a new orchestra, the Aiken Symphony Orchestra, has been founded with a mission to provide educational and musical enrichment to the city of Aiken. And whereas the Aiken Symphony Orchestra, under the leadership of renowned conductor Dr. Donald Fittenberry, has offered the city, citizens of Aiken, an inaugural season of quality performances commencing on Thursday, September 17, 2015, at the University of South Carolina Aiken Etheridge Center. Now, therefore, I, Fred B. Cavanaugh, Mayor of the City of Aiken, South Carolina, and City Council, do hereby proclaim the week of September 17th through September 23rd, 2015, as a special time of commemoration and proclaim it as Aiken Symphony Orchestra Week in the City of Aiken, and encourage all citizens to join in recognizing and supporting our new symphony orchestra as a valuable cultural community asset today and as we move forward into the future. Presented this day, 17th day of September 2015, signed by all of the members of council. Now, as we agreed, I'm going to give this to you, but I'll take it back because we're going to use it Thursday night, okay?
It's gorgeous, absolutely gorgeous, Mayor. We appreciate it and look forward to seeing you on Thursday.
Thank you.
I do have another one. It's a proclamation for National Preparedness Month. No one is here to accept this. So, however, I'll read it so that everyone can understand what it's all about. Whereas National Preparedness Month creates an opportunity to learn more about ways to prepare for all types of emergencies, from natural disasters to potential terrorist attacks to public health threats. And whereas emergency preparedness is the responsibility of every citizen, all citizens can take a few simple steps, staying informed about the potential threats, making a plan, and building a ready kit to help make citizen preparedness and personal responsibility a priority in every community. And whereas the U.S. Department of Homeland Security, with the Federal Emergency Management Agency and officials in the federal, state, local, and private sectors are working to prevent and respond to all types of emergencies. These activities, along with a prepared and vigilant public, contribute a level of state and national preparedness that is critical to security in our city and the homeland. And whereas, as we observe National Preparedness Month, the City of Aiken urges households to follow this year's theme, Don't Wait, Communicate. Make your emergency plan today by creating a customized communication plan. Now, therefore, I, Frederick Cavanaugh, Mayor of the City of Aiken and South Carolina, Aiken, South Carolina, and City Council, do hereby proclaim September 2015 as National Preparedness Month in the City of Aiken, and recognize the importance of preparing for all potential emergencies. Item three, request by the Pink Ribbonettes to place pink ribbons in the downtown area. Mr. Chairman.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor, and through you to the members of our City Council. As you know, October is Breast Cancer Awareness Month. Ms. Joan Jarsik, president of the Pink Ribbonettes, will be present to make their request to all of you this evening. They wish to place about 100 pink ribbons along Lawrence Park, Newbury, and Richland Ave on the streetlight poles for the month of October. Council has given approval of this request for the past several years. For council consideration is approval of the placement of pink ribbons in the downtown area during the month of October as requested by the Pink Ribbonettes.
Okay. Jeanette, speak. Let's see.
We would like to thank the council for allowing us to do this project. We are a cancer support group and awareness group. We have about 60 members on our roster. We meet once a month from September through May. And this is one of our big projects that we do for breast cancer awareness during this month.
How many years has it been now since you've been doing this?
I've been president for 3 years, and it's 3 years, and I think they did it a few years before that.
Right.
So you'll also have a luncheon. Is that also planned?
Mm-hmm. We co-sponsor the Pink Tea coming up in October on October 14th in conjunction with USC Aiken, Aiken Tech, and Aiken Regional Medical Centers.
Would that be at the Ethwick Center?
Yes.
Okay.
Yes.
Very good. Do a wonderful job.
Oh, thank you.
Awareness. Can I entertain a motion?
Yes.
That we approve the this project with the pink ribbons around our city.
Okay.
Second.
Got a second. Any discussion? If not, show of hands, please.
Thank you.
Passes unanimously. Thank you very much
for
what you do. And I'll see you there. Under all business, discussion of appointees to various city boards, commissions, and committees.
Mr. Mayor, Council has 11 pending appointments to fill vacancies on different city boards, commissions, and committees. No appointments are presented for Council's consideration and vote at tonight's meeting. However, a list of boards, committees, and commissions needing appointments by the City Council is attached for your information.
Okay. Do we have any nominees for the next meeting?
Mr. Mayor, I'd like to nominate Rusty Finley for the Building Code Appeals Committee, James R. Finley, as a reappointment.
Mr. Mayor, I would like to propose Jermaine, J-A-M-A-N-E, Williams. Jermaine is a civil engineer. He has his residential business license, and Plumbing, HVAC, and his electrical construction license, and he is at 1339 Pleasant Drive. The other person that I'd like to reappoint to the Community Development Committee is Leroy Mark. Leroy currently serves as vice chair, and he's also has experience in the human resources area. He's on Carlton Avenue.
Okay. Any others? I have two. Royal Robbins, reappointment to the General Aviation Commission, and Michael Beckner, reappointment to the Recreation Commission. These will be on our agenda for our next City Council meeting. Okay. Item two, Jim Lakes Extension Road Options. Mr. Clay.
Mr. Mayor, and through you to the members of the City Council, while our three speakers this evening approach us at the table, I would just like to say that that we are hopefully getting very close to the decision-making process, the first of which obviously would be to, on advice of these experts and others, to try to ascertain in the first instance what option makes the most sense to deal with the reality that the citizens of the Gem Lakes Extension area are facing each and every day. If a decision is made this evening, thereafter we obviously need to enter into conversations and discussion about whose responsibility it is to undertake this work and what options are available for this council to consider. So having said that, I'd like to turn the meeting over to Mr. Rick Toole, who has a presentation for us.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. Mr. Mayor and members of council, we appreciate the opportunity to set before you today. Of course, you know George with Engineering and Utilities. We also have with us Andrew Johnson, representing the Portland Cement Association. I'm going to let Mr. Johnson answer questions about a particular recommendation towards the end. He is with the, was with the South Carolina Department of Transportation for many years before he retired, and who is a pioneer in the area of the recommendation in South Carolina that we're going to make this evening. So he has a lot of experience in the area. We have a presentation, a slide presentation.
Excuse me. Are you folks mic'd up?
Yes, sir.
Okay, so can you hear them all in the back okay? Not very well. If you could speak up, I appreciate
okay.
it.
Okay.
I can see that. The faces going back and forth.
Okay.
So, thank you.
What you'll see on the screen is a presentation we tried to prepare for this evening. This presentation was established based on a request from Engineering and Utilities Department to try to promote a recommendation or bring forward a recommendation this evening in regards to the options that were presented in the original report. So that's where we'll start. We started with the original recommended construction options, and of course, you'll remember there were six options that was in there, included in the original report. The options were 1 through 6. They included a do-nothing option, a mill and repave option, patch and overlay option, next slide, FDR full depth reclamation option, an option consisting of removing existing pavement and improving the base material with a soil cement additive, a traditional option of removing the asphalt base and whatever subgrade was necessary and replacing by reconstruction of the total pavement system, and then finally a hybrid of that where you would remove the asphalt and base and then utilize a soil cement or chemical additive to improve the base. Following the recommendation of those options in our last presentation, we heard discussions from various council members, had conversations with the engineering department, and consulted amongst ourselves in the industry to determine that two of those options could be actually modified and improved to address the concerns that were brought forth by members of council. So the next slide you'll see includes an option 4A. And this option included the full depth reclamation with an additional funding source included to address up to 40% of the existing subgrade for additional repair. So it was an improvement by addressing issues associated with subgrade concerns. The next slide will show options 5, 5A, 6, and 6A, with 5A being a new option. And that particular option included also recognizing subgrade concerns that there was an additional funding source in place in the option to allow for identification of failed subgrade areas or subgrade areas of concern to have that removed and replaced with new subgrade material. And then the base and paving would be replaced as indicated in option 5. So with these options, we were asked to look at a selection criteria matrix. Now, selection criteria matrix is a numerical evaluation tool that establishes a level of confidence achieved for a pre-selected set of criteria. This particular process is utilized by Six Sigma. That's where the idea came from, and that's the basis on which it was designed for this particular application. There were selection criteria that were identified based on various factors. There were, and as you can see, the selection criteria across the top, there's a room in that particular matrix for 8, and it can be expanded to whatever is needed. There's also a weighting factor, which establishes the level of confidence or the level of importance each selection criteria will achieve in the overall evaluation. So the weighting factors are installed across the that top grade bar. And then down the left side, you'll see a series of 1 through 5, and that can be expanded as well. Those are project options. And then finally, the rating itself, how do you rate individual selection criteria for individual options is on the right. They're actually rated high, medium, or low. And there's a numerical evaluation associated with a high, medium, and low. So this was the mechanism utilized to evaluate the options to bring some objective questions. The weighting factors for each of the selection criteria across the top, that weighting factor is multiplied by the rating that is populated in each of those open boxes for each construction alternative. Those multiplied numbers have been added across, and on the right-hand side where you see total, that's the total evaluation. So it gives you a ranking, a numerical ranking, an empirical tool to try to determine what your best options are. So what did we use for selection criteria? The selection criteria were established based on our understanding of council concerns expressed individually and through the last council meeting where options were represented, discussions with the engineering and utilities department, experience with similar type projects, and knowledge, general knowledge of the remediation alternatives that were included. So based on that, you can see the selection criteria were identified as, first, it was addressing subgrade concerns. Second was the structural stability of the base course. Third was ongoing maintenance risk and serviceability ratings. Fourth was the aesthetics of the pavement system itself. Five was the construction cost associated with the option. Sixth was the smoothness of the pavement surface for reliability. And seventh was the impact of the construction activities on the residents in the area. These selection criteria provide a general list, but they're also critical in their elemental ability to observe and to distinguish the importance of the various elements associated with any construction option that may be selected. The next slide shows that each selection criteria has a weighting factor associated with it. This also assigns a level of importance of the selection criteria in the overall evaluation process. So you can see that correcting the subgrade and correcting the base and the ongoing maintenance risk were all rated as a 10, which is the highest level of rating factor utilized. The aesthetic look was reduced to a 9, the cost an 8, rideability an 8, and then construction impacts to a lesser degree because most of the people did not indicate the construction or the impacts of their community by construction was of significance, but it was of concern. Now, we talk about rating considerations. Once you take one of the selection criteria, each of those criteria have to be rated of how they will, each construction option will respond to that selection criteria. So we have a level of confidence that any selection criteria will be applied to a particular construction option. And you see the low, medium, and high, and the numerical ratings of 1, 4, and 9. Those numbers will be utilized to populate that chart and give us an opportunity to determine what the numerical values are as we move across. So what are our construction options? These are the options that we looked at originally. However, option 4 was modified to be 4A to include a soil remediation for the subgrade, and option 5 was modified to option 5A to include subgrade remediations. So what does the chart look like? And across the top, you'll see the selection criteria that were included, the subgrade, the base, ongoing maintenance, aesthetics, costs, smooth ride, construction impacts. And then down the side, you'll see the 7 options that were identified and evaluated. So we go on to the project selection matrix. These are populated and they are weighted as low, medium, with the exception of cost. And I think that if I can give you just a little bit of background, and I'll start out with comparing option number 1 to option number 6, because those two were heavily discussed during our initial meeting. Several members of the community said the do-nothing option wasn't an option. Well, it is an option, but the concern was very validly stated, is that it does not meet up to what needs to happen. And if you'll take a look at the matrix itself, you'll see that the level of confidence of a pavement system that will last or provide any level of satisfaction in the area, you'll see a low rating, which is the do-nothing option, all the way across. It totals to a value of 60. There is no way to evaluate the subgrade in a continuous approach for that option. The base material will be only repaired in those areas that you have patches through continued maintenance. There's an ongoing maintenance program because we feel that it'll be 15 years of continual patch and repair. The cost is astronomical if you add it up over a 15-year period, in excess of $1 million. The smoothness will not be minimized in any whatsoever because the number of patches and the continued failures, and the construction impacts will be ongoing throughout the 15-year period. So consequently, the rating or ranking for the do-nothing option resulted in a factor of 1 for each of those selection criteria, totaling a value of 60. If we look down to item number 6, which is option 6, you'll see that the subgrade correction, and this is a traditional repair method for pavement repair. This is remove the asphalt, the base, and subgrade, and replace it in kind according to specifications. In that particular option, the subgrade is addressed and it received a high value of 9. Similarly, the base course is reconstructed with a higher level of base configuration. It also receives a value of 9. Ongoing maintenance is minimized to a high degree, so it has a high value of 9. The aesthetic look is a new pavement system. It receives a high value of 9. The cost in and of itself received a low value because of the cost was approaching the cost of the do-nothing option, which is in excess of $1 million. However, the smooth ride has a value of 9, and the construction impacts had a medium value because the length of time could extend from anywhere from 2 months to 4 months in time. So if I'll take the cost, and the first thing George questioned was, why did I deviate from the rating standards for construction costs? And that was simply to allow for the variability in the wide range of construction costs associated with various options. If you'll remember the cost from the original table, they range from $300,000 roughly to over $1 million. Taking it in $100,000 increments, we took anything over $1 million as a rating of 1, $900,000 to $1 million is 2, $800,000 is $1.9 million, all the way down to $300,000 to $400,000 as a rating of 8. I did not assign a value of 9 to anything. So you can see the spread ranging on the cost there is 1, 2, 5, 6, 7, and 8. So that is the spread on the particular cost. So what is our construction recommendation based on that particular table in the matrix? Basically, option 4A represents the best option, it appears, for the rehabilitation of the roadway. Option 5A came in a close second, as noted in the green at 524 points. However, I need to move back to the 5A, although it provides a similar level of confidence for construction options, there are several things that need to be considered. One, it does not incorporate the asphalt into the new base course. 4A actually grinds the asphalt, and the asphalt grindings are actually incorporated into the new base material, along with the chemical additive for cement. Option 5 does not achieve the same structural number as option 4, so the pavement is not quite as strong as option 4 for the same reason. It will result in additional time because the actual existing pavement is physically removed and hauled away from the site, and then the site is, the base is actually prepared. Proof roll areas have subgrade concerns identified. That's repaired, and then the chemical additive is incorporated into the base material when it's reconstructed. And the removal of the asphalt will increase the construction cost. So those were the primary differentiators between options 4A and option 5A. So in full depth reclamation, what we're looking at, 4A includes the cost for subgrade remediation if it's required. And I think Mr. Johnson is going to speak to that a little bit more in just a moment, what may be required and what he feels like based on the information we have, or whether or not subgrade remediation is actually required. The full depth reclamation is a proven and effective pavement remediation and construction method for South Carolina. I think there's over 4 million square yards in South Carolina. In 2014, I'm sorry.
It's just 1 year's worth.
It's 1 year's worth, 4 million square yards in one year. And it was used for exactly the type of remedial work we're looking at here. The full depth reclamation provides a significant increase in the pavement structural number, which results in a higher level of service of the pavement. It requires the minimum construction time of all the options. And if constructed appropriately, it should provide 15 to 20 years of actual wearable and usable surface without significant construction. I put this chart in, and I stole this chart from Andrews Cofart, Portland Cement Association. This is regarding a Portland cement type concrete. This also applies to asphalt concrete as well, and you can see how the pavement life series or life cycle. The pavement life cycle is the blue line, and you have preventative maintenance that's required in the first years of the life of the pavement up through 10 to 12 years. And then when you get into the later years in the 15 to 20 year range, you're looking at reconstruction. As long as the rehabilitation's maintained, then the corrective maintenance is maintained throughout the life of the pavement. You get a good system that acts in accordance with the original design parameters. Unfortunately, in the case of Jim Lakes, we're in the reconstruction. We're way out to the right of that particular curve and in need of full reconstruction to make that pavement correct. So I wanted to just give you a little idea about the definition of the reclamation and what it entails. If you'll hit that one more time for me. And I won't read it, but basically, it's a chemical additive to existing materials. And it takes the pavement, the base, and some of the subgrade. It pulverizes it. It mixes it. Through laboratory testing, the amount of cement is required to create the appropriate compressive strength is determined. That's applied. It's mixed. In place and they're allowed to cure. Can I move forward again? When is it appropriate? Go ahead. When the pavement distress in the base of the subgrade is the cause for failure, this is an option that should be considered. If full depth patching is required on more than 15 to 20% of the total surface area, this is an option that should be evaluated. And then finally, if the pavement structure is inadequate for current or expected future traffic. And from what we've seen here, it's inadequate for existing traffic, much less future traffic. So the FDR process itself, this is a great graphic. It gives you an idea of what it looks like. You start out with an existing roadway, which has a traditional asphalt surface, a granular base and subgrade. They use machines that actually pulverize the asphalt surface, the granular base, and a portion of the subgrade. Some of the excess material is removed so that you don't overlay your curb and gutter. Basically, you don't build it too high. You remove excess material. You add your chemical stabilization, in this case cement. It's mixed, shaped, and compacted. And then once the final surface is prepared, then you can come back in with your new surface, in this case an asphalt surface. So I did steal a couple of photos from them. This was the first project held in South Carolina. It was Highway 97. In 1994, you can see what the photo looks like, and then again, you can see 20 years. This was, now, and remember, this was the first case utilized in South Carolina. So they worked out a lot of the bugs in that one, and you can see how it looks. But another one is the old Zion Road, which looked in this condition in 2004. In 2007, that's what it looked like. I apologize, I did not include the 2014 photo, but I promise you, except for the asphalt looking a little grayer, it has no signs of distress in 2014 after 10 years of use. And that's a secondary road, if I'm not mistaken. So it has a lot more traffic than what we're looking at here. With that, I'll say the last one is the South Carolina FDR program. I think it's important to understand that it's become a primary tool for pavement rehabilitation in South Carolina. They've let 4.5 million square yards in 2014, February of 2014, which is a lot of area. I don't know what they've let.
We're on target for 2015 to let over 6 million square yards, which is approximately 825-mile lane miles.
To give you an idea of how wide it's used. And then finally, the 1.1 million square yards just in February alone. So with that, what I'd like to do is open it up for questions, because I'm sure there are questions on behalf of council. And then, like I said, I have Mr. Johnson here to help us answer any specific questions you may have regarding the process and the outcomes anticipated for this particular option.
Rick, going back, I think you said 5A and 4A.
Yes, sir.
Are what?
Those were the two highest rated options. 4A is the recommended option.
4A.
Yes, sir.
Okay. And I noticed, we all noticed, I'm sure, as we looked at the sheets, that you've got a lot of them that say very low risk.
Yes, sir.
Very low risk. And I guess I get a little confused here on if all of them are very low risk, does that doesn't necessarily mean that they're all going to stay well or good for the same period of time?
I think all of those options, Mr. Mayor, that are considered very low would have the same expected pavement life. The reason for the selection criteria matrix that was utilized was to distinguish those four very low options based on a number of factors, not just the pavement life cycle.
Yeah. Are you, in effect, telling us that we ought to maybe choose one of those?
Yes, sir.
Or that's what you would do if this,
yes,
was, if this was yours?
Yes, sir.
Which one is the better of the?
Well, we feel that option 4A is the best option.
Okay.
And if I can use construction cost alone, I'll take two factors that are easily for people to resonate with. One, you're talking about $365,000 for 4A versus $1 million for option 6. And if they come up with the same life cycle cost and the same basically same pavement condition after 15 years, I would go with the $365,000. The second issue is the length of time of construction. I understand that they can do the FDR in just a couple of days and have it primed and sanded, which can be traveled on by the residents at that point. We would say after 48 to 72 hours, it's been recommended that they use a steel wheel roller and vibratory compact it or vibratory roll it to produce micro cracks in the FDR before they apply the final surface. The final surface, they can pave both of those roadway sections in probably a day, maybe a day and a half around the manholes, working around manholes. So you're talking about 2 weeks worth of work maximum. Whereas if I go with the 5A, you're probably talking about a month's worth of work. You're going to increase that by a month. If I talk about 6, you're talking anywhere from 2 to 4 months. In 2 to 4 months, anything can happen. Foul weather, any adverse weather conditions could delay construction. It could increase construction costs as a result. It could have some negative effects. But also, number 6 will require an excavation anywhere from 20 to 30 inches of material out of an existing roadbed in front of everybody's driveway. And that means up to two months, they could be not allowed to get into their driveway just because of the construction requirements. Whereas the FDR, after a couple of days, they can actually drive on and get back in their drives.
Mr. Mayor, question for Rick. They will be able to see some noticeable improvements in 2 weeks. Is that what you're saying? In 2 weeks?
In 2 weeks, it'll be done.
Okay.
Good question. The last time we talked about this, and we've been talking a lot, we still did not decipher what is the underlying cause of the problem. 4A is going to solve that problem regardless of whether it's groundwater or, you know, some of the other things people were talking about.
I feel that it will. I'm going to let Mr. Johnson tackle that because he went out and looked at the site with us when we elected 4A, when we saw that 4A was coming out of top of the matrix.
Well, based on our site visit, and admittedly, I haven't had a chance to do any actual exploration of the site, but looking at the nature of the distress, it would appear to me that because we don't have any gross distortion of the pavement in the area beyond kind of the patches, that would indicate that the issues within the pavement are typically related to its inability to withstand the traffic loads rather than an underlying weakness in the subgrade. Because when you have a subgrade-type failure, typically what you're doing is you're distorting that, the soil that's underneath the pavement, you're actually deforming that material. And typically that causes the pavement to move at a considerable distance, including the curb and gutter. And I didn't see any distortion of the curb and gutter at the time that we visited the site. So consequently, I would believe that while the subgrade strength may be poor, that the pavement structure itself appears to be underperforming what you would expect for the structure that was used.
I still believe it was traffic induced during the early warm period, formation period, during construction.
It was a very nice presentation.
Mm-hmm. It's guaranteed that it still look good in 15 years.
Well, I'll tell you what, I'll guarantee that one as much as I will 6 when I go back and construct it all.
Mr. Mayor, I have a question that borders. I'm sorry.
But no, you're first.
That borders on a legal question, given that we don't own the roads.
That was my question.
And we have not discussed how this is going to be paid for. But yet we're coming to a point where we have a recommendation as to whether we're going to accept that recommendation. And we begin to move forward with trying to work to improve the conditions of that road. How does that bind us if it doesn't work as to contributing to a greater extent to the problem given what we have in front of us this evening?
Well, I think before council can authorize any work to be done, council has to wrestle with the question, how do we take over ownership of the roadways? Because you can't perform work like this on roadways you do not own.
Okay, that's fair.
And then council has two options in that regard, and one is to negotiate with the developers, the owners of the road, and ask them, you know, what they're willing to do in order for the roads to be dedicated to the city so they can take that action, or council can choose to attempt to condemn the roads, go through that process similar to what DOT does when they're, you know, building new roads in the state, right-of-way, that sort of thing. They actually go out and purchase the right-of-way, and if the purchase doesn't work, then they go to court and they ask the judge to, you know, set forth an appraised amount or appraised value for the roadways. Or like option one on Mr. Tools, you know, council can do nothing with respect to the roads, and obviously nothing can be done if you do that.
Question I was going to ask.
What do we do with the rest of the roads around the city? We have particular roads, Ascot and West Pleasant Colony. There's some in Kingston and a number of roads that have the same type of failure. I think once we address this, obviously the domino is going to line up for fixing other roads, type thing. So how do we continue to address these other roads? Some of them the city owns, some of them the city doesn't.
I think we're going to have to look at each one on its own, Reggie. I know you brought this up many, many times, and it's certainly a valid subject that we'll have to get into. But I don't think we can sit here. We've got this issue right now that we're working on. We want to get it done. We want to make it right as much as we possibly can. And to go and start talking about the other roads is something else. They all might be somewhat different. So I think each one of them, in my view, is going to have to be looked at on its own. It may be the same thing. It may not be the same problem. I mean, you seem to think that they're all the same. Maybe I'm wrong, but I'm not so sure they are. And until you really look at them, like we've been looking at this, I don't think we're going to know exactly what's going to happen with them.
Well, it used to be happening. My opinion is the failure mechanism is very similar, and I'll put it that way. And the test we've run on the other roads kind of head in that direction.
Maybe.
I do have one question on the installation of this. Down the failure mechanism, and there was a failure on this road on top of the water line, on the stormwater, the sewer line, and it said whether it was a leak that caused it or in construction. Does this stabilization pretty well bridge that four-foot gap so that the roads won't cave in later on as the underneath continues to compact?
I'm sorry, Mr. Everett. Are you referring to the area that failed when the proof rolling with the dump truck found it was void? That's a separate issue. That will have to be addressed as a separate issue.
But
that will require the excavation of poor materials, replacement compaction. You probably need to inspect the storm sewer system in that area as well.
On this particular road, do we need to run some tests down beside the lines to be sure that that is stable? Because once you do this, if it's unstable under this, it'll continue to be a problem.
Yes. All the pavement design options are based on the assumption of a stable base under or subgrade underneath the pavement. It doesn't have to be particularly strong to function appropriately, but obviously if you have an area that's undergoing settlement just from the lack of appropriate construction technique over a utility, that will probably continue to settle as they're going forward. Unfortunately, the pavement is not intended to be a bridge. It's intended to primarily just protect that subgrade underneath.
But that void was the result of erosion due to a water leak, is that right?
That's correct.
And it was a pressure line, a supply line, not a storm sewer line that was leaking, is that right?
That is correct.
So that was a city line that was city owned at the time it was leaking, is that right?
That is correct.
So it was
a
city
line. Also a stormwater. The stormwater pipe that went through the road had a bad joint, and the water came through and stormwater did, but it was still a failure. Okay. What I would recommend is that As we've done on Ascot, we're doing another road, is that we would replace all the water services on these, this section of road, and when we go across road, we'll put casings in. And that way, repair and the degree of reliability will be improved.
The leak, though, of the water, not storm water, but the potable water, was it at the service point, or was it within the pipe system under the road?
It was in the general area.
Because it would seem to me that erosion of that magnitude would almost have to come from pressurized water, not just water dripping out of an unpressurized storm sewer system.
There's a chance or a probability that that was the case. But
if that's true, and I'd like to know if it's true, if that's true, but if it's true, and I don't know if it is, but I'd like to know if it's true or not, but that would seem to clearly delineate whether that particular collapse was a city responsibility or not, because the city owns that water line. So, I mean, if that's what caused it, I think it's cut and dry whose responsibility it would be. Is there a way to know that definitively?
There's no way to definitively announce it one way or the other. However, there were certain factors that can be identified. One, there was excess water that was under pressure moving through the system. Number two, a void was created. That void was created because there was a joint that was not properly put together on the storm line and allowed water to come through and carry soil particles with it. And over time, the movement of those soil particles continued, and you had what we call a regression failure, where you had a void start creeping back upstream towards the source of the water. There's a combination.
But either way, the storm sewer line and the potable water line that were actually both city-owned at the time.
I don't know about the storm sewer line.
Stormwater was about city-owned.
City-owned, known as stormwater system. Okay. I have another question for Mr. Johnson.
Would you like to address something that was just said?
Okay. Can I finish my questions?
Okay, sure. Go ahead. Well, go ahead.
Mr. Johnson, I have had a nagging theory in the back of my head for a long time, and as we've moved forward, I've tried to rule it out. But something you said just earlier brought it back to the fore. Talking about the lack of deformation due to subgrade failure, because I, along with I think everybody else early on, I've always thought that was the problem. And so this is really maybe a hard question for you to answer, but is it possible with the failures that you're seeing in that asphalt, since that's not consistent with some sort of catastrophic subgrade problem, could that be consistent, those failures be consistent with the application of bad asphalt, improperly mixed or too cold or a bad asphalt job? Is it possible?
It is one of the possibilities that could
not likely. Or?
Well, unfortunately, I only saw it after it was patched and not during. But from what I was told, it was primarily a fatigue type structural cracking, and so that occurs when you deform the layer of asphalt beyond the point that it can endure repeated loadings, and it'll induce cracking. And so, consequently, that could be generated by the asphalt itself having poor resilient properties due to overheating, overrolling, or some effect like that. Or it could be induced by excessive or lack of stiffness in the system beneath the bottom of that asphalt layer. My understanding is there's a sand clay earth pipe base underneath there, and so it's possible there could be problems with the earth pipe base. It's possible there could be problems with the asphalt. A lot of it occurred, looks like, right along the gutter line. It may be that water may have stood in the cut while it was under construction. I've seen that happen quite a few times, and that can lead to...
And the reason I'm asking the question is not that it changes my point of view on responsibility and all that stuff, but it changes my level of assurance in my own mind about what the right fix is. And I can tell you, I paved something almost at the same time these were done, with the same asphalt from the same plant. And it was very inferior quality, and I refused it and had a big to-do over it. I'm just wondering if this was bad asphalt and that was really all that was going on, I would feel even that much better about, say, for instance, option 4A than having to go do a full grade, you know, option 6 or 6A, full depth reclamation and all that stuff. I mean, if I felt like it was really potentially asphalt failure itself, you know, the bad asphalt mix, then I would feel all the more assured about something like a 4A. That's why I'm asking. I mean, you can't tell me though if that's really might be what it was.
Well, my own experience with forensic investigations on roadway failures, and sadly I've had a few over the years, is that it's typically not one thing that was done wrong. It's typically a variety of things that were done in a borderline fashion, and you just pile them all up. They don't quite spell mother when mm-hmm. it's done, and so it's often a combination of factors, not just problems. One bad actor, but maybe just like it takes two cars to have a wreck at an intersection, you can kind of do some things and be kind of okay, but then you do two.
See, I want to be tied up in a nice pretty little bow, and we can't do that.
It's, you know, they really come out that one, sadly. So, you know, I wish I could give you a cleaner answer to your question.
No, that's okay.
Hard to know without proof.
That's okay. All right. Thank you.
Mr. Decker.
To answer your question, Mr. Meyer, about the water, I notified city engineering twice by email that there was a constant flow of water into that storm drain starting in January. I believe my first email went out in January of that year. That water was leaking from that pipe apparently since January, constantly, day and night, dry weather, wet weather. So what effect that had in terms of what happened, you guys will have to determine that. But there was,
I've been told that by more than just you.
Yeah, there was constant water there. I mean, and it was reported. I mean, I did report it. I just had two quick questions, if I may. You had stated in your summary that concerns exist about water content, moisture content under the subgrade. I would assume that when you remove the pavement, that you will do some proof rolling or testing before you actually redo it and reclaim it or whatever. Is that, would that be correct? Or
the answer?
Yes.
What's the answer?
He might be better suited to answer since he's an expert on the process.
in the regulation process, there are specific requirements on the degree of compaction required to achieve the desirable strength from the material. And if you are building over something that is soft, imagine trying to knead bread on a mattress.
Right.
You can't really get compaction. So generally, if you have sufficient stiffness to achieve the appropriate compaction, then the pavement will perform unless there is some future drastic change, like a leaky water line or something, or a severely fluctuating water table that can cause that. But again, I didn't notice the stain that would be consistent with that necessarily.
Well, it's been for a long time. The city engineer had noted water. The Gall and Kisner's engineer noted water beneath that road. City hired a sonar or a radar detection company, and they twice radared that road and found water underneath those roads. So it's really, yeah, I just hope that we're addressing that potential problem that might exist there, because there's just been too many reports of water, and I've personally have witnessed at the bottom of that road water actually coming seeping through the road itself. So it's, you know.
Well, ultimately, the function of the pavement is to diffuse the loads on the surface to a point that the subgrade underneath is protected from permanent deformation. Mm-hmm. And that's one of the structural functions of the pavement. So consequently, even that water per se is not necessarily something that will cause the pavement to fail. It's more the saturation and poor support caused by the water and that excessive movement. And so the modification process, because it is a cement-based process, typically is, I wouldn't say impervious to water, but it is not prone to the degree of saturation that you would get with a granular material such as a sand clay base that was used at that site. So you know, again, I would hate to just say 100% guaranteed there will never ever be a problem with a pavement, because that never happens. Right. But this has been applied in very similar situations in a number of subdivisions with success. Okay. And so but I understand your concern.
All right.
Also, the recommendation still stands to place a French drain behind the curb for that lower area. Pretty much throughout the lower area, we get that first trap.
Right. Coming back up. I mean, there were numerous discussions of where this water was coming from. There's swales on the property that are diverting the water down onto the street. I was looking, you know, maybe we're excess watering in the neighborhood, this, that, and the other thing. But the bottom line was that there were constant reports almost from the beginning of water being present in that subgrade. Even when they were paving there, I believe there were reports that there was paving, that subgrade was wet when it was being paved. So, I mean, I'm just concerned that we don't spend the money and then come back in 5 years and say, hey, gee, we should have done something with the subgrade. As long as you're confident, then that's my question. Thank you.
thank you. I'll tell you what, I've got a concern about water, too. I think there's water in there, this makes me feel good if this what you're presenting to us will do away with any water that is in there, and it will be successful. What degree of success do you think that this 4A will give?
I have high level confidence that it will give you 15 years with normal routine maintenance of serviceability.
I would agree. There are always problems with any construction technique. I've never seen reclaimed paving fail due to weakness. It's typically been other issues related with an improper amount of cement being applied. And so typically the reclaimed base is relatively impervious to the effect of water, but again, obviously, if you have severe water conditions where water is coming out of the pavement in great profusion, that can cause problems. However, I didn't see that level of water when I was there. Now, that's not to say that it can't, that mm-hmm. that condition can't exist at other mm-hmm. times.
Mm-hmm.
Mr. Mayor, it is evident that there would be large cuts behind some of the houses. There's a high likelihood that they intercepted the groundwater table in those cuts. However, it didn't change the groundwater level as it moved towards the lower end. What it did allow, though, is water that was in that zone of saturation where it came through the bank, that water would come out onto the surface and travel along the surface if there were any clay lenses at all. So you would see saturation in certain points and yards. The groundwater level by the time you reach the street may still be 6 or 7, 8 foot down according to the borings or more. However, the surface could be saturated as a result of that interception of the water, portion of that groundwater flow through the back. That would contribute to the water that has been behind the curb, water that eventually entered behind the curb and got under the subgrade or under the pavement. Open curve between the pavement and the lift and gutter, and got into the base material. And that sand clay base is susceptible to water deterioration in a very quick fashion.
And we're talking about, in addition to whatever remediation or step that we might be considering here, we're talking about changing of all the water services for all the homes on those roads, as well as putting in fresh drains.
Yes, sir.
So those two things combined would be over $100,000 probably. Yes, maybe.
I don't know about the water services.
The water services will use our utility crews, just like we have a Mascot in Springfield.
Mm-hmm.
And that's not approaching $100,000. I think you'll see that in the process that those costs are included.
No, I didn't know that they were included. Did I misread that? They are, that those costs are or are not?
Yeah, the edge drains, the fresh drains included.
Oh, okay. I misread it. I'm sorry, I misread it, and I thought it was not included.
George is correct. The water lines are not included.
Okay, but the French drain is. Okay, I misunderstood.
Right. So we have Gall and Kisner here.
The better half's over there. I'm Todd Gall, Gall and Kisner. Just a couple real quick things to maybe be a little bit helpful, because you guys don't know what all is there, but we, in the initial construction, did put French drains on both sides, and Larry Morris was involved with that, and we actually ran cameras to see if it was the water was getting to it. And I have some photos of that, and the city does as well. And be glad to show you where we did that, you know, if, you know, whenever that gets to that point. And about the storm drain, we did repair that, and had to get with, as George talked, he wanted me to get involved with an engineer, Hildebrandt was involved in that, how to do it, what to use. So on the inside of all of that, you know, he told us how best to do that, what to use, wanted to know all of the requirements. We did not do anything on the outside because we didn't know the volume of, you know, what really did happen and where did it stop and start, and just kind of quit with it at that, but there was no more water in it. The water obviously did stop. We were there when they were making the water line repair, so the water was coming out of the pipe. As soon as they made the repair, they stopped, you know, coming into that area of the storm drain. So
water from our supply line was getting into the storm sewer line.
Yeah, you have a perfect video. You drink it coming out of that storm sewer if you wanted to. It was that clear. But as soon as they made the repair, they were there. The repair people were there. And now have new
problems. Mr. Decker was hearing water in the storm sewer all the time was because our supply line was getting into the storm sewer line.
Yes.
But it was leaking out of the storm sewer line and eroding everything underneath that.
Right. But it did. I mean, the repair was on both parts were made. The city made their repair. We made it, and we do have new pictures and video of that as well. Appreciate your thorough report. Thank you.
Don't leave, please, sir. Mr. Mayor, this leads us to where we can possibly come to some sort of conclusion here. Solution is what I'm looking at, and how can we all win with this? If we take immediate acceptance of this road, it means that we own everything. I am trying to protect the city with my comments, but meanwhile look for a solution for Jim Lakes as well. And the first thing I thought of was, can we share expenses but still not own the road? And personally, I am not fully comfortable. I trust you, Rick, but I'm not fully comfortable with the acceptance yet. And I know we've got the data, but I'm just not fully comfortable. And I'm trying to come up with a level that I'm comfortable with in voting for this, where we have a solution, we're sharing the cost, and we agree upon a timetable that we can accept those roads after a period of time. Do you want to work with us with sharing the cost? Here's your other half in the back here.
Steve has a pretty good presentation to talk about, but I think at this point we would not. We have spent a tremendous amount of money following the path,
okay,
you know, that we have been guided to.
Mm-hmm.
And so to all the requirements and all the details, and so it's getting tough to taste.
Okay.
You know, I mean, I'm just being honest.
All right. I was trying to cut to the chase, so that's why I was asking the question.
I'm
Steve.
All about that.
All right.
Is it all right if I speak?
Yes.
I'm Steve Kisner, 30% of the Gall and Kisner partnership. You know, I'm going to preface my comments by saying I personally am furious about this, but I'm not going to let you guys win. I'm going to keep my composure, okay? Todd and I have conducted business in this city collectively for over nearly 50 years. We have built over 1,000 residences, 1,000 homes. our reputations are impeccable. And I think this has come down to our reputations. Mm-hmm. And I think this council has been a problem, and I want to talk about that. For the last several years, we have come to council meetings. We've come to work sessions. We've heard our name slandered over this road issue. And I really think that a few of you have encouraged the slander. There's been dozens of articles in the local paper. Dozens. I mean, how many times have we seen that truck with the wheel down in the through the surface of that road, a picture of that in the paper? We didn't cause that. It was a city water leak. And we're convinced that that storm drain separated, that joint separated because of that city water leak. Now you have attached our names to the construction of homes in Cedar Creek, which we didn't even build. And some of you have encouraged that. Some of you have written emails about taking our city licenses away, our business license, because of the quality of these homes. Now, where are the facts? How do we know that the quality of these homes is bad? How do we know that? We're just dealing in innuendos. Somehow this has got to stop. I want my reputation. That's important to me. And you guys have not helped with that. Lessie and Gary stole my thunder. In the last meeting that I attended, one of you pointed to the residents over here and said, "We're going to fix your roads." And I'm sitting back there thinking, you're going to fix their roads and we own them. And you've reminded us of that constantly over the last several years. We own the roads, but you're going to fix their roads.
Who said that, Steve?
Well, I'm not going to get personal.
You're saying things, but you're not going to go into any details.
Well, you want me to go into detail? I know who said it. It's in the minutes of the meetings, of the minute, last meeting, city council meeting.
That's okay.
Todd and I are not going to agree to anything unless a couple of things happen.
Okay.
First of all, we have to agree with the plan. Second of all, this committee, this council, it needs to acknowledge the conclusions of this report that we got from Rick Tool and Wilmer Engineering. You need to acknowledge it. If you haven't read it and understand what it says. It doesn't say that it was poor workmanship. It doesn't say it was poor materials. It says that the city specifications are not adequate and the construction traffic of the homes caused the failure. That's what it says. Okay. The last thing is, before we do anything to the roads, the city's going to have to take them over. Okay. Now, that's up to you guys. You can decide. Todd and I, in conjunction with the city, in working with the city engineering department over the last 5 years, now listen to this number. We have spent $185,000 making patches that we were told if we would make these patches, the city would take the roads. Now, where's the fairness in this?
If they didn't fail again in a period of time.
What's that?
If they did not fail in a certain period of time.
Well, the patches haven't failed, in my opinion.
I don't know. I'd have to leave that to the folks that are the engineers.
Okay.
I haven't been out there.
But the direction was from the city engineering department. You make these patches, we'll take the roads. So that's where we are. If you can't understand my frustration, then I'm sorry.
I can do.
That's all I have to say.
Back to 4A. Is that your, in your judgment, that's what ought to be done?
Yes, sir.
Okay. Are there any other questions, any comments? It's up to council to determine and decide if this is what we're going to do. Are we going to think about it, come back at the next meeting and do something with this?
I propose, Mr. Barrow, that we have, that this would be an executive session to talk about the the do's and the don'ts, what the what ifs, if we accept the roads, what can happen, be prepared with these other roads that we're going to be faced with, and some timeline, and certainly if that we will work on these other repairs. I would say a do nothing. I know that you said that is an option, Mr. Toole, but it's not an option for me. I think we need to do something in terms of helping the community. But I think we need to be fully aware of what to expect with these other issues that will come up beyond the Jim Lakes Road.
And that's a very valid concern. You know, if whatever we do, if we do anything, I think first it needs to be couched in the idea that, you know, we're not accepting any guilt, fault, liability, anything like that. We're simply trying to come up with a practical solution for some good, honest, taxpaying residents who have bought new houses on roads that are in bad shape. But, you know, I want to guard against setting any kind of binding precedent as we try to deal with these roads, because, as you said, Mr. Mayor, this is one individual set of circumstances, and all the others are all different. And while, you know, we're perfectly willing to listen to each and every one of them, this is individual. This is one case, mm-hmm, mm-hmm, and only can be applied to this one case.
Go
ahead.
I was touched by Gall and Kisner, and I want to personally apologize. This is just me. If you feel strongly that we have, this body has impacted your reputation and your business reputation, in which you earn a living, I want to say that I'm sorry for that. Not that I am part of that, but I want to say I'm sorry for whatever blame you've assumed for things that is not proven, but a lot of accusation, and I've heard those things as well. And I'm just sorry, and let's just hope that we're at the point now that we're going through a healing period where we can move forward with a recommendation and solution to the problem.
Leslie, I personally like your idea of having an executive session sometime soon, and because we need to get all of our thoughts together. What do others think about that?
I'm in agreement.
Okay.
And let me just say, Mr. Baird, that we're not stalling. We will come with a solution. This is not a stall. It's coming. But give us a chance to talk fully about what is next in the event other issues come up. After hearing what has been presented, I pretty much know a direction that I'd like to go. But I think we need to fully discuss it.
Mr. Mayor, on the memo it says also our city attorney will discuss the legal matters. Have we already done that, or you
want to
reserve that for the executive session?
I think that was my response to Ms. Price's question earlier. Mm-hmm. Certainly, if there are other legal issues the council wants to delve into, we could do that in executive session.
Okay.
Whether it's tonight or at another meeting.
No, that's fine. Thank you.
Well, Jeffrey Jordan, I just want to make a quick point about can kicking and taking things, you know, piecemeal, that kind of thing. It will be a very difficult decision to make, of course, on the right thing to do. There's the right thing to do, and then there's the expedient and equitable thing to do. But the decision you make is going to be binding to some degree,
right,
in the eyes of the community. So you can't just say we'll take these things case by case, because then it will be you're doing it for them, why don't you do it for me?
Exactly.
That kind of thing. And of course, the emotion has to be taken out of a lot of things. It has to be a practical, business-like decision that has to be made, so you don't have guys who have been in town for 30 years paying taxes and building homes upset because people are running down on the ground.
Right.
You know, you can't be defensive about those things and turn it into personal issues. This is a business decision. This is a bad road. And then, but whatever decision you make is going to stick with you. And the guys on the streets that Councilman Edmund mentioned, hey, you did it over there, you got to do it for me. So I just want to caution you when you do make your decision that you take all those 10 years down the line, not just about that road, but what's going to happen a year from now when some other resident wants their roads fixed and there's no money for them or whatever the case may be. we've got to start thinking strategically and long term, not just what is equitable right now because everybody's upset and we got residents that are mad and business people that are mad. It has to be a strategy to make sure that we make good decisions in this city.
And that's why forward. I said we need to discuss it in the executive session.
I agree.
And we're talking about millions of dollars beyond this decision.
Thank you for that. You're absolutely correct.
I'm sure you know what I'm going to say. In executive session, as the counselor just gave you some legal advice, here in the public, for everyone to hear, I think specific matters related to these roads and the ownership of these roads and the paving of these roads, certainly discuss that in executive session.
Correct.
Discussing precedent, policy, and things that will go forward, that certainly should be discussed in public session.
Okay. Absolutely. Thank you. Thank you.
Thank you.
Mr. Mayor, I just wanted to comment that it wasn't our hope today that after hearing from the panel, and from our citizens, that we might take the first step, which is to identify the solution without getting into who's paying for it and whose road it is and how we're going to deal with that, all of those issues, and how this might impact other roads. Those are all issues that have to be dealt with. But the fact is that we have a panel before us of experts that are telling us what they believe the option is to fix it. And without getting into who's paying for it or whatever, I think it is important, especially, you know, we've heard about how our comments have impacted and our actions or inaction have impacted, but there are 45 families that have lived with us day in and day out for years. And I think at our earliest convenience, it would be helpful to at least identify the option that makes the most sense. And the gentlemen that appeared before you tonight are not making political statements. They're just telling the facts as they see them in years, decades of experience. And so the ultimate decision is the council's. But if you are at a future meeting, at the next meeting or whatever, are going to turn to staff and say, if we are to take any responsibility here, anywhere from 0% of the responsibility to 100% of the responsibility, I have to know what option we're talking about. If I know what option we're talking about, then we can lay out options that include items that need to be discussed in executive session, but certainly not financial implications. But I can't do that if I don't know
what you know. I'll be prepared to make a motion, and I would move that we endorse whatever the legal word is, endorse, accept, recommend option 4A.
Second, Mr. Mayor.
Okay. All right. Any discussion?
Well, to go ahead and decide everything right now, forever and for good, no executive session, nothing, just
option 4A. No. This is one issue.
That's
here.
It.
Okay.
One issue.
So you're following what John was just suggesting.
Absolutely.
Okay. So in other words, that we will move ahead in studying option 4A as we go into executive session.
Yet to be determined who's going to pay for it. It's yet to be determined anything beyond that.
You're just so concise on your motion. I want to make sure that was clear.
And I support that.
Yeah. Right.
I think the city attorney better put the words to this because the long-term impact of this is important, like the gentleman said there. And we need to put the other words in there that this option is for study or something and it's not a decision to move forward with. It's a study option.
No, that's not my motion. My motion is based on the input presentation by these three individuals as it relates to the Jim Lakes roads that I would ask council to endorse option 4A. And there's other issues beyond that, but just simply to accept their briefing at the request of the city manager as a step forward, that we would endorse option 4A.
Do you endorse that as we say?
I do, and John's, our city manager's comments are very important. He needs something to work with, and for us to give him nothing to work with in terms of taking the politics out of it, costs out of it, where do we go to from here, so that he can come forward to us with another recommendation.
But if we vote to endorse option 4A tonight,
And then we determine through more fact-finding or through whatever discussion that we might have in the future that that's not a...
a viable option.
Not a viable option. What does it mean? I mean, this is uncharted territory, endorsing an option. I mean, I like what he's attempting to do, but what does that mean? Does that bind us to what?
Well, it's possible that after you've given the city manager this guidance, that he could go back and
look
through
the books. It's not irreversible, but it's
a... he could go back and look through the books and not be able to find the funding to be able to do the project. I mean, that's certainly a possibility. He still has to come back to you with a path forward based on utilizing item 4A.
Not only that, we still have to... that doesn't bind us yet in terms of saying we are accepting the roads.
We may not get the roads.
Right.
Oh. So there's still some hurdles that have to be jumped right. over.
As long as that's clear. I mean, I like what he's trying to do. I just want to make doggone sure it's clear.
Right.
I'm sure if it, you know, 4A under discussion, you know, when we start talking executive session, is untenable, you know, obviously we'll have to migrate to another option.
I just don't see how it's ever going to be untenable. We've had the presentation, we've had all the facts.
I'm just saying it's a possible.
Well, I don't think so, but anyway.
Are we ready to vote? I think there's a question. Are we allowed to take a question?
No, we shouldn't be, but...
No, we shouldn't.
Not according to the rules.
I could be wrong, but I believe the city code requires that this road not be in private hands. We are now 7 years into this road being in private hands. How do you justify that? How do you say, well, we'll have another meeting, we'll discuss it, we'll have another session, we'll this and that? Enough time here. City code says that this road cannot be private. It's in private hands. He's liable. I mean, if I'm Mr. Kidd, I'm not going to speak for Mr. Kidd, but if I was him, I'd want to get this road off of my hands because there is liability there. But the citizens are paying taxes over there to the city for their road. That's what they've got over there. Am I incorrect in saying that? I mean, am I incorrect that there is code that says the city cannot have a private road in that location?
I wasn't saying that the city wasn't supposed to take over the road. I'm just saying there's always a possibility the city cannot get the road.
At what point does the city step in and say, we have to take this road over, irregardless of the condition of it, whatever? Well, 7 years, are we going to go another year?
I would hope there's never a circumstance where we'd have to take a road if it was a crummy road. Then there would never be any obligation on the part of a developer to ever have to, or build or anybody else, to ever have to build it well if we were going to have to take it no matter what.
Well, then if you're not going to take it, then don't allow citizens to build homes in there and occupy it and then face this dilemma. I mean, you know, this dilemma wasn't alarming.
How could we ever enforce our standards if they knew they could build a substandard and make us take it anyway? We couldn't enforce our own standards.
The engineering reports were not done correctly on that road. The testing was not done correctly on that road. That was a city obligation to provide those testing services and ensure that this road was built correctly. That's not done. So we really can't establish what was the causality of this road failing. We don't have compaction test results on this road. We don't have it. I mean, it's been alleged that it's there, but it goes right through. What was the city's responsibility to ensure that this road was constructed correctly? Nothing? I mean, you know, we're the citizens. We've been there for 7 years. I walk down that road every day, and I look at the where it caved in. 4 months, 5 months now.
We're working on a possible solution for you.
Well,
let me just say, this is a step forward.
Yeah.
I don't know how you see it, but sitting here, this is a step forward. We're not going to say it's going to take another 3 months, but this is a step forward for Jim Lakes.
No, I see it. What I see it as is yes, it's connected to other developments. It's connected to other issues within the city with other roads and other developments and this, that, and the other thing. But that doesn't negate the fact that this development is in trouble and needs help.
I don't know any...
Mr. Decker, we understand that.
Right.
And I would hope that you see over these past few months, if you will, we've had experts talking. We have some two here now. We're about to make a decision based on what they're suggesting is the best.
Right.
We're trying to move forward. We've always said we want to do what... we can do, what we should do, to make these roads better.
You have the experts' advice.
And we don't need, I mean, we need you to help us a little bit here. And we understand about some of these problem areas. We're trying to get there and get them fixed.
We've
got other citizens out there, too, that we have to, we've got 30,000.
We have another meeting in 2 weeks.
Citizens, too.
And let me just say, we have a process for roads.
Yes.
The roads are built. They have to satisfy a certain criteria for a certain period of time. In this particular case, it's 1 year. I understand the law now is 2 years. That the roads need to be built and pass inspection. We've not gotten to that point, and despite some disagreement, misunderstanding, if you would, we're following that process. And it may not play out exactly as it ought to, but we're going to get to the end result one way or another. We're going to resolve this issue, hopefully with cooperation of everyone involved.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, where are we?
Motion second, so we're ready to vote.
Okay. Any other discussion about that? Okay. Show of hands, please. Okay. Opposed? No. Okay. Passes six to one.
I'd like to thank those guys that came out and did such a special job.
Thank you.
For your guidance and your expertise. Okay, on item 3, second reading and public hearing of an ordinance to rezone 0.16 of an acre at 616 Whippoorwill Court from RS6 to RS15, single family residential.
Mr. Mayor, Rebecca M. Green of 616 Whippoorwill Court is requesting the rezoning of 0.16 of an acre from RS6 single family residential to RS15 single family residential. The property was gifted to Ms. Green by Mike Calhoun, who recently requested some adjacent property to be rezoned to office. This parcel would serve as a buffer between the office zoning and the residential use. Property gifted to Ms. Green was zoned RS6, and it is to be combined with her current lot, which is zoned RS15. To comply with the zoning ordinance, both parcels are required to have the same zoning district in order to be combined. At a July 14, 2015 meeting, the Planning Commission considered the request for rezoning this gifted property from R6 to RS15. After discussion, the Commission recommended to Council that this 0.16 acre be rezoned from RS6 to RS15. City Council approved this ordinance on first reading on August 10, 2015. For Council consideration, a second reading and public hearing of an ordinance to rezone 0.16 of an acre at 616 Whippoorwill Court from RS6 to RS15 single family residential.
Thank you, sir. Do we have a motion and a second for approval?
So moved.
I second.
Okay. Discussion? If not, show of hands, please. All in favor? Passes unanimously. Item 4, request to renew a memorandum of understanding with Joy N. Aiken. Mr. Glenn.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. Joy N. Aiken, formerly Juilliard N. Aiken, has brought Aiken tremendous positive publicity since its inception in 2009. It is now time for us to renew our memorandum of understanding we have had with them. The proposed MOU will last for 5 years, and our responsibilities will continue to include staff assistance, transportation for performers and their instruments, and various promotional efforts. The next festival is scheduled for March 5th to the 12th in 2016. We have reviewed the MOU and recommend the Council's acceptance. At the August 10th, 2015 meeting, several Council members have had questions about the value of the in-kind services provided to this very worthwhile event. We have estimated those in the attached memo, principally the public safety contribution and the parks, recreation, and tourism for their in-kind services as well. We have representatives from our public safety department and PRT here to explain anything further that might need explaining, and we have representatives from Joy and Aiken who are here to answer any questions about their event.
Okay, thank you, sir. Do we have a motion and second for approval?
I so move.
Okay. Do we have a second?
I'd just like to make some comments.
I'm sorry.
Do we make some comments?
Yes, please.
Okay.
I'll second, Mr. Mayor.
Okay.
I'm Janice Jennings, Executive Director of Joanne Aiken. Thank you so much for the opportunity to speak in support of renewal of the Memorandum of Understanding. We're certainly very excited to continue a partnership that has proven to be so very valuable to our organization and that I hope will prove to be ever more valuable to the city as well. Our president, Sandra Field, who is co-founder of the organization with Stephen Nafee and Greg Smith, had hoped to be here tonight to address all of you. Unfortunately, she's out of town, so with your permission, I'd like to read her remarks, and then if you have questions, of course, I'd be happy to answer those as well. On behalf of Steve Nafee, our chairman, and the Joanne Aiken Board of Trustees, I would like to extend our sincere thanks for the tremendous commitment and support that the city has given to Joanne Aiken, formerly Juilliard and Aiken. The city's administrative officials and staff have been key to our success over the past 7 years. We could not have logistically managed the large number of artists, instruments, and performances, nor the extensive outreach programs throughout our county without your help. In particular, I just have to give a shout out to the former and current staff of the Parks, Recreation, and Tourism Department. They are some of our most tireless and hardworking heroes. Joanne Aiken is indeed a joint effort, and we look forward to our continued partnership with the city. Mayor Kavanaugh, we also want to thank you for being one of our most loyal fans and supporters. Your service and innumerable contributions to this community have helped make Aiken a great place in which to live. We wish you all the best in your retirement and look forward to seeing you and Lee at our festival performances. Recently, we informed the community that Juilliard and Aiken had been renamed Joanne Aiken. While the directive for the name change came because of a change in brand policy by the Juilliard School and was not initiated by our organization, I want to assure everyone that our relationship with the school remains as strong as ever. In fact, we are very close to completing our artist roster for 2016. With the help of Elizabeth Joy Rowe, one of Juilliard's most distinguished alums and now our festival curator, we are planning a spectacular March festival that will include Juilliard students, distinguished Juilliard alumni, world-renowned organist and Grammy winner Paul Jacobs, who is chair of the organ department at Juilliard, and a few surprises. Stay tuned. I also want to assure you that we don't think of this partnership as a one-way street. In addition to bringing internationally acclaimed artists and innovative outreach programs that touch the lives of thousands of students throughout our county, particularly those in need, we also want to bring economic stimulus to this community. We strongly believe that Joanne Aiken is now uniquely positioned to play a pivotal role in Aiken's future. Through its 7-year connection to the world-renowned Juilliard School, Joanne Aiken has established a reputation for providing the very best that the performing arts have to offer. Already, our reputation extends far beyond the city limits. Analysis of the 2015 festival ticket sales shows that audience members came from all corners of South Carolina, as well as from 20 other states. As we increase the festival's visibility, we increase its potential to become an even stronger regional and perhaps even national draw, attracting the coveted cultural tourist, bringing an influx of consumers to our local businesses, and creating an even more potent profile for Aiken as a cultural destination. We look forward to this new chapter in our growth, and with your help, we'll strive to continue bringing joy to thousands of adults and children and helping put our community front and center in the cultural landscape of the Southeast. Again, we thank you.
And Janice, from what I'm hearing, because of the name change, that has not impacted the ticket sales or anything, that you're still very, very strong and will continue to have a prominent presence. Given what's happening right now with your sales and the interest, the name change has not hurt at all, in other words.
No, we have absolutely no indication that it has damaged the organization or its mission in any way.
Okay, perfect.
Janet, thank you so much.
Thank you.
Certainly, this has been one of the wonderful things that's happened to Aiken over the many years. And it's good to see it continuing. And tell Sandra hi for us and thank her as well.
And Steve as well. Thank you so much.
Steve too, yeah. Okay, thank you. Okay, we have a motion and a second. Any discussion? If not, show hands, please. All in favor? Passes unanimously. Okay. Item 5, approval to proceed with stormwater improvements between Whiskey Road and Fabian Drive.
Mr. Mayor, at our last meeting, the City Council directed staff to proceed with a bid opening for stormwater improvements between Whiskey Road and Fabian Drive near the old Teresa's Mexican Restaurant. Bid opening was conducted on September 3rd. Three vendors participated in the mandatory pre-bid conference, and only one vendor, Gary McElmory Construction, Inc. of Beach Island, submitted a bid. Their bid was for $157,063. This is approximately 5% higher than our estimated budget of $150,000. Staff and our consulting engineer, Tilden Hillebrand, have reviewed the bid and recommend its acceptance. We have $50,000 allocated to this project from the Economic Reinvestment Fund. Tonight, Council is to provide approval of the bid and fund direction for the remaining $107,063 of this project. Mr. Grinton is here to answer any questions that you may have about this project. See, coming up.
George, I have one as you were walking up. Why only one person wanted to do this job?
I think one of the things we're finding is that there's a lot of construction going on. Contractors are busy. We're finding that costs are escalating higher than we would expect them to be. You're back into that kind of inflationary cost time frame. We've talked to lots of designers, and they're all saying in the last 12 months costs are going up and people are busy. So
well, that's a good thing.
In general, it hurts a little bit really when you go out to bid for a job.
Right. Are there any comments or questions of anyone? Did you have something special you wanted to present?
Well, I have talked with the various individuals. The total project bid was $157,000, of which approximately $34,500 is in the right of way on the streets on Fabian, and so that is something that I feel like the stormwater fund should pay for. Starbucks has committed to $46,171, which says that there's remaining $76,338 in funding that I need identified where we will charge those that cost to. The Philip Mary property, the shopping center, if you look at the two areas, they're contributing approximately a third of the water that flows into the system that has to be enlarged. However, the shopping center, they have no motivation to contribute to the project because, there's no easement. Their water, as far as they're concerned, is taken care of now. It just causes trouble to others. Philip Mary, I have talked with him. I've discussed the portion of property. We're still in the process of gaining the easements. We have the property plat easement drawing, and when I have the actual easement documents, then I plan to contact both Philip Mary and the Reynolds brothers, because those are the two that I need easements from before I can proceed with the work. So the portion of Philip Mary and Shopping Center would be contributing to $35,000, but Mr. Mary's not interested in contributing. The shopping center has no motivation whatsoever to contribute, so I would recommend that we find out how to fund that elsewhere. So there's also an issue with a portion of the work that is outside of the contract that Starbucks will be installing between their property and the catch basin. This is actually the section that will go across Mr. Mary's property. And so I feel it would be appropriate to give them a credit for the cost of that pipe, which is about $4,300. Now, the Reynolds are interested in having a fence replaced, which the Starbucks developers have said that they would be willing to contribute, which is probably going to cost about $5,000. So they're going to incur an additional cost above and beyond what I'm talking about here. So the net difference is $80,658 is what is needed in funding. We had $50,000 identified for economic development, so there's a shortfall of approximately $30,000.
Should these two properties contribute? Why should they? Let's put it that way. Whether they will or not, why should they?
There's this system was installed in the 80s. This is when stormwater requirements were first being, implemented. My perspective of just looking at the design, looking at some of the facts of stormwater, it would appear that the person who owned the property at that time, and I think both Mr. Mary's and the Reynolds property were one owner at that time. They designed something that would handle their property, and they really didn't look at what was behind them. And I'm not sure they were required to. I'm not sure that the regulations were clear that that was something that needed to be done. And I'm not even trying to say that that's exactly what happened, but it appears to have been that, because You needed a larger pipe. So it gets back to the dilemma that council was facing earlier when you tasked me with solving the problem. How do you develop and correct an old problem? How do you fund it? These are private property issues. They are not, the stormwater falls on private property, happens to be three different property owners. And when it gets out to the road, yes, we need to have our system enlarged. We are working to facilitate this to help Starbucks come into the community. We're providing them kind of an engineering service, as it were, to help them resolve a downstream stormwater issue. And this will ultimately cost them less than what they would have had to do. So then you look at kind of the legacy issue associated with the Reynolds property, Mary's property, the shopping center. If you're the Reynolds, they're being very gracious to us, allowing us to enlarge their pipe. They intend to keep ownership of that pipe. It's not being considered dedicated to the city. Mr. Phillips would be kind of saying the same thing. He is, supporting, allowing this solution to be completed so that Starbucks can come in through an easement on his property. And then the shopping center, even though they're contributing, really doesn't have a dog in the fight, so to speak. But they are contributing, but they're not affected. And all of these things are legacy. And that situation will continue to go on unless we address and do an engineering correction to it. So that then becomes the dilemma: is how do you, who should pay for what?
Well, I understand. The reason I ask the question is that we're very likely to put a business and an individual in bad light because we're asking them to pay money for something that we probably shouldn't be asking them to pay for to begin with. So I'm not even sure that they should have even been listed anyplace. I mean, just no matter what we say, some people are going to think they're bad because out of their pocket for absolutely no reason, they don't want to pay some money that the city feels it needs to get this done. And I guess as a legacy cost, I'm not so sure that it isn't the city's responsibility and not these two businesses. But
If the city feels like it should be, should pay for it, I would I mean, that would obviously, I'd be fine with that. The only thing I would be against is the stormwater fund paying for it, because this is not a stormwater defined regulatory issue. Stormwater can flow any way it wants on private property, and it can cause trouble to neighbors, and we don't get into that fight. We take care of it once it gets into the right-of-way, and we carry it properly away from that point of acceptance to detention ponds, etc.
Well, if there's an advantage to the particular property owners and you want to ask them whether they want to contribute, that's okay, but you need to be careful about putting them in a bad light if they decide.
And if they say no, and I have talked with the Reynolds. They're not interested in contributing. I've talked with Mr. Mayor. He's not interested in contributing.
Do they get any benefit?
Pardon?
Do either get any benefit from what we do?
Philip, Mary will. Reynolds, marginal.
Okay. What would Philip get?
Since they have done some, there's water that comes down from behind Teresa's property that at one point in time there was a berm, and I don't know who had the berm, who constructed the berm, but there was a berm. It could have been the original owner of the property. That berm has worn, partially gone away, and then when the gas line came in and on their property, they graded it the way they wanted to grade it, and the berm's no longer there. And they don't want you to put the berm back or him to put the berm back. Then that started his flooding issues.
Okay, so the question is, what amount of money, you know, what percentage?
The 9% came to $9,214.
Okay. So tonight you're asking council to consider $107,063.
Yes, that's the project bid, and then asking for the identification of how to fund the other $80,658. Well, $50,000 has been identified as economic development, and I guess maybe the logical thing would be to increase that amount to $80,658, and then that would, then all the cost of the contract is accounted for.
Okay. This is part of the hospitality tax?
No, economic reinvestment.
Economic reinvestment.
Right.
Monies.
Yes.
Okay.
Is that the same?
I think this is.
It is. It's one and the same. In terms of the hospitality tax, we have a portion that will go to the economic reinvestment from the hospitality tax, which is being put to good use. In my opinion, the intent of this hospitality tax is to reinvest and help businesses. And certainly I'm supportive of this with the direction we're going here.
Well, if you go back in time, and Mr. LeDoux and I had somewhat of a disagreement, the Stormwater Act was already in place when this was done, and they were supposed to account for the water that was coming across that property. As we develop other areas in the older, if you will, that land hasn't been developed, we're going to run into the same problem. If you want to, there's a lot of other issues that should have happened. I think it's 1984, but that should have happened about easements and all of that that didn't happen. And only way you solve it is what we're doing today is you fix the problem. We caused our own problem, if you will. In a minute, we'll discuss the TD Bank property. And the only way that's going to get developed is to fix the problem. Otherwise, it won't happen.
So if we do nothing here, we're not helping a business. Is that what you're saying?
And one of these days, the other businesses are going to change. I mean, that's inevitable. So what Mr. Grinton has said, it adds $35,000 to the, is it economic fund? I don't understand the hospitality tax yet. And we'll go ahead and fix it.
It's a good thing.
I think so, too.
Are you making a motion?
So moved that we add $35,000 of $35,033 to the economic development, from the economic development fund.
I'll second it.
Good.
Okay. Any discussion? Show of hands, please. All in favor? Passes.
I think that's in your district, isn't it?
We have an issue. The city attorney's not in here, and we have somebody that recused themselves, and this needs to be put on the record, and it's not. So when the city attorney gets back, he needs to make that statement.
But Philip recused himself.
Yeah. So we need to wait for him to come back.
He can come back. Okay, let's move on here to new business. First item, first reading of an ordinance to amend the concept plan for South Aiken Prompt Care UHS at 1021 Silver Bluff Road.
Mr. Mayor, GMK Associates has requested a revision to the concept plan for the South Aiken Prompt Care UHS at 1021 Silver Bluff Road. October 13, 2014, City Council approved a concept plan showing a future expansion area of 1,992 square feet in addition to the 7,500 square feet of floor space currently under construction. However, the developer has requested that an additional 1,473 feet be added to the future expansion area of 1,992 feet for a total addition of 3,465 square feet. The additional expansion area is to house a future primary care practice. The requested expansion area has been reviewed by the City of Aiken on-call traffic engineer, who has determined that the revised concept plan does not warrant an additional traffic study. Planning Commission at their August 11, 2015 meeting considered the request to revise the concept plan for the South Aiken Prompt Care UHS on Silver Bluff Road. The Commission voted unanimously to recommend approval of the revision to the concept plan as requested, with the following conditions as stated in the memorandum. For City Council consideration on first reading is an ordinance to amend the concept plan, allowing a future expansion area of 1,473 square feet to be added to the future expansion area of 1,992 square feet for a total addition of 3,465 square feet to house a future primary care practice at 1021 Silver Bluff Road.
Okay, thank you, sir. Do we have a motion?
Second, Mr. Mayor.
Okay, second.
Let me just add, this is much needed on the South side.
Yeah.
I just have a question. Does anybody know what a primary care practice is?
Yes.
Mm-hmm. What is it? It's not specialists, it's your
regular physician for all of your
GP?
Right, general practitioner.
Okay, all right. Thank you.
And just acknowledge Scott and his firm is here. I'm SETI. They're here at the university.
Welcome. We're glad to have you.
Any other discussion? If not, show of hands, please. All in favor? Passes unanimously.
Before we proceed, we need to have the city attorney clear up about the recusing, and you were not here during the vote. Do you have to be here during the vote or anything on this last one? Well, we still need to fill out the paperwork, and maybe that's been done already.
I think Mr. Mayor just needs to fill out his recusal form. Yeah.
Can we move on while you're doing that? Okay, item two. First reading of an ordinance to approve the sale of 1021 Chatfield Street Northeast. Mr. Clint, please.
Mr. Mayor, a gentleman has offered to purchase 1021 Chatfield Street Northeast in Crosland Park for $62,000 for the property. Pre-qualification letter from SRP Federal Credit Union has been provided, indicated he qualifies for a VA mortgage loan to purchase the property. The appraisal for the property shows an appraised value of $63,000. If an offer less than the appraised value is received for the purchase of property, the offer must be reviewed by City Council for approval. Staff has reviewed this purchase and recommends Council approval. For City Council consideration is approval of an ordinance to sell 1021 Chatfield Street Northeast to Melvin L. Fair for $62,000 upon the terms and conditions set forth in the attached purchase and sales agreement.
Okay, thank you, sir. Do I have a motion and a second for approval?
I so move that we approve this first reading of an ordinance to approve the sale of 1021 Chatfield Street Northeast.
Second, Mr. Mayor.
Okay, there's a second. Discussion?
Yes, sir. I want to commend Emily. We've talked about veterans and using some of these homes in Crossland Park to attract more veterans, and I want to thank you for reaching out and getting this accomplished. And Gail would agree with me there, so
yes.
Good move. Mm-hmm. Thank you.
Okay, any other discussion? If not, show of hands, please. All in favor? Passes unanimously. Item 3, approval of proposal to develop infrastructure plan for Whiskey Road from Betty Lane to Oak Grove Road. Mr. Fenn, please.
Mr. Mayor, after further evaluation of the sewer line project along Whiskey Road, we believe we need to study further the commercial properties south of Lad Brick property to B80 Lane. We have obtained a proposal from Haas and Hillebrand to study this area. They will evaluate and submit a report estimating the cost to install sanitary and storm sewer infrastructure to support the economic development of these properties. The cost for the study is $3,900. The study cost will be paid for out of Engineering and Utilities Engineering Division Professional Services. For council consideration is approval of an agreement with Haas and Hillebrand to conduct a study of the area south of Lad Brick property to B80 Lane for the development of an infrastructure plan.
Okay,
Mr. Britton is here to answer any questions that you may have.
Okay. Do we have a motion and second for approval?
So moved.
Well, I have a quick question. Is this in any way similar or overlapping with any of the work that has been discussed by the county, by Camille Figuarelli at the county regarding the Whiskey Road study? Because she's looking at storm sewer.
This is really just kind of a targeted commercial area. There's very specific
boundaries.
Yeah, boundaries and properties. These are the ones that we believe could be connected to the ones that we're doing with the TD Bank George's Pond project. And so this is just kind of, can we extend that and what can we do, what is possible? And that way, when new development interest is in the area, we would be able to give them an answer that what they can and can't do.
Okay, thank you. Yes, it's my understanding somebody has already called about the Lad Brick property and these particular items is how this got on the agenda. I've heard about it and asked Mr. Gritt and Mr. Clem to put it on the agenda. So when somebody comes in, both of these properties would already be covered and they'd say, hey, it cost you X dollars to tie into the existing sewer and the potable water.
Mm-hmm. Very good.
Double smear for it.
Okay.
Second.
Wait a minute. Wait a minute. I know it does. Okay. Do we have a second?
Yeah. I'll second it.
Well, already did, but that's okay.
That's okay. No, let's.
Okay.
Second, third.
Any other discussion? If not, show of hands, please. All in favor. Okay. Passes unanimously. Item 4. Acceptance of an FAA grant for terminal apron expansion at Aiken Municipal Airport.
Mr. Mayor, at the August 10th meeting, the City Council approved our application to the FAA for the expansion of the municipal airport's apron. This expansion will more than double the capacity of the airport's terminal apron. We have formally received a grant offer for the FAA for this project. The breakdown of the grant amounts are below. FAA share, $2,261,288. South Carolina Aeronautics Commission share, $125,628. And the city share would be $125,628. Tonight, we ask for Council's approval to accept the grant award. We did not receive the official notification of the award until 9 September, and we must have a return to FAA by tomorrow, September 15th, in order to receive the grant award. We've been notified by the South Carolina Aeronautics Commission that their share of the match money was appropriated by the South Carolina General Assembly this year, and they have their match portion allocated for the project. We recommend using either the Economic Reinvestment Capital Enterprise Fund or the Hospitality Tax Funds for our match, as was discussed, I believe, at an earlier council meeting. For council approval, tonight is acceptance of an FAA grant for $2,261,288 for the terminal apron expansion. We have our airport manager present this evening and members of our Aeronautics Commission present to answer any questions that you may have.
Okay. Do we have a motion and a second for approval?
I so move.
Second.
Okay. Any discussion?
Just a couple of questions. Number one, we're throwing a lot of money, taking a lot of money out of the Economic Development Fund, and as far as I know, it's got $214,000 in it. We need to be careful. I think we all have agreed that we would do that on a cash basis. We wouldn't spend it before we had it. I'm not sure that we have $125,000 in there, but we might, but I would just caution. The other thing is that does this acceptance of this grant cause us to need to spend any other money that needs to be allocated? In other words, I understand we're tearing a couple of hangars down. Is that money in the grant, or does that have to come out of our pocket? Got them looking at each other, so it must be a good question.
There's no obligation to spend any other money. However, we do want to replace the hangars that will be removed. And that was the discussion that we had, and I'm not sure that has been resolved at this time yet.
Is the money to tear down the hangars part of the grant?
It is not. That will come out of what we were planning to do is we have a contractor who would be interested in removing the hangars, and we would give them the salvage material. So it's, we haven't got all the details worked out, but we're expecting it to be a net zero cost.
Okay. And that's got to be done before we start to put the grant in, I would say.
That's correct. We have not started that because we haven't, committed to doing the grant. As soon as we find that, there's a successful vote to start with the grant, then we'll move very quickly to get that started.
How long will it take to do the apron?
150 days, I think, was...
Yes, about 150 days is the projected time period in the contract.
Likely to be done then before the Masters?
Yes, that's what our plan was.
Okay, all right. Thank you, Mr. Mayor.
Yeah. I've got one question on this. Do we need to address just the 2.2 that we're accepting, or do we need to address accepting the Aeronautical Commission's share as well? Or is that a separate issue?
It would be the FAA grant only because that has the deadline. As you note, the letter we received was dated 9/8. We didn't receive it till 9/9, and they were nice enough to give us 6 days to get it back to them. But I've spoken to our local representative on the Aeronautics Commission, and that money, as the cover memo stated, is budgeted as part of their match. That is one of their projects they would like to fund this year.
It's a no-brainer to get $2.2 million for 125.
As long as you got the 125.
Right.
That's right. Well, this is certainly a good thing for the airport and for the community as well as we move forward. We've got a motion and a second. Any other discussion? Not, show hands, please. All in favor? Okay, passes unanimously.
Mr. Mayor, I just want to add, too, with this Economic Reinvestment Fund, we promised the voters that we would be transparent with this hospitality tax. I think John's putting this on the web. Is that right, John?
That is correct.
On the web. Yeah. So they will know how we're using this this piece of this hospitality tax and under the Economic Reinvestment Capital.
School board said that, too.
No, we intend to be transparent here with every dollar.
Okay.
Well, I think the whole statement is we're putting just about all of it online that we weren't doing before. So we want to continue not only this, but the other items you have started doing that so that everybody knows how money's being spent.
Yes.
Absolutely. Item 5, approvals to pave Holland Park and Valley Green Drive. Mr. Clem, please.
Mr. Mayor, recently the sanitary sewer lines on Highland Park Drive and Valley Green Drive were replaced. As a result of this work, the roads were patched, but this made the road surface very uneven. The roads, state roads, and a schedule for resurfacing in fiscal year 16-17 under state funding. We have made arrangements with the state through the Aiken County Transportation Committee to move this resurfacing work up to this year by adding the paving to our current paving contractor as a change order. Under this arrangement, the city would pay the contractor for the work, then the city would submit an invoice to the state to be reimbursed for the cost of the paving. The cost for this resurfacing would be $177,952.41 and would be paid for out of CPST3 money. Finance Director Kim Abney reports that there is sufficient cash on hand, so an interfund loan will not be necessary. The state has agreed to this reimbursement per the attached letter, which will be credited back to CPSD 3 road resurfacing account. Council consideration is the authorization to schedule the resurfacing of Highland Park Drive and Valley Green Drive with the current contractor as a change order so that roads can be paved this paving season. The state will reimburse the city for the paving for the 2016 paving allocation. And I would be very remiss if I did not recognize the incredible work of Senator Tom Young and our legislative delegation that worked tirelessly with us to convince the state that this whole project made sense. It's a total win-win for the city, for the state, and also for the neighborhoods.
Very good. Very good. Thank you, sir. Do we have a motion and a second for approval?
So moved.
Second. Okay. Any discussion?
Yeah, just a quick comment. I would add some kudos to the city manager for jumping on it as well. This started out really as a sort of a negative because the after the repair of the pipe, the condition of the road that was left was not very good, and in factually was a safety issue, and that's what prompted everybody to jump to hoops. I appreciate the efforts of George Britton. But we got to make sure the paving people don't leave hazards on the road when they finish under any circumstance. So, but I think everybody in the neighborhood is very, very grateful that we're moving ahead to get that road paved. Thank you.
Okay. Okay. All in favor? Show of hands, please. Passes unanimously. Item 6, approval to spend CPST 3 funds for the purchase of mobile software for public safety. Mr. Clem.
Mr. Mayor, we have for many, many months had a team, interdisciplinary team from IT, from our public safety department, and Stuart, working long and hard on this issue, and they have a presentation to make to us this evening.
Very good. Your name is?
We have Stuart Beaton, Assistant City Manager, Public Safety. Yes, we began last year identifying a path forward to replace the software suite used by Public Safety. We've been using the same vendor, or using the same suite for 21 years. It had reached its end of life, and we began the process of marching this forward after discussion inside with staff. We developed an RFQ earlier in the year that was released to prospective vendors in the late winter of 2015 with due date of April 15, 2015. We received 6 submittals, and we judged we had to eliminate 2 that did not meet specs. We made site visits to our top 3 vendors that were used by individuals or entities in the state, and that's detailed in the memo on page 173, the 3 counties we visited. And the team met back together to discuss all the various vendors and recommending to the council today that we go with SunGuard. The funding for this was appropriated by council. I identified a portion of it out of capital project sales tax 3, as well as a portion of it, approximately $183,000, out of this year's general fund. And I would like to let Captain Keston go into a little more detail in terms of how we got to this point.
Absolutely. Thank you. We started with that RFQ at the beginning of the year, and that facilitated a bunch of site visits after eliminating a portion of the responses to the RFQ. The reason we eliminated those companies, the 6 that started, we only went to 3 site visits. They were not already certified in South Carolina to do the things that we're already doing, electronic transmittal, incident reports up to the state, electronic looking up of driver's licenses and things like that that the officers have in the car. So we decided only to go to the three vendors who were already certified in the state of South Carolina. We know that's a very difficult process to overcome and to achieve. In the month of June, we took three different Tuesdays. We had some very wonderful hosts around the state who were using the software packages that we were looking at from those three other vendors. We spent a whole day there with members from the entire public safety division. So we had someone from records, someone from dispatch, we had officers on the street. We had people coming from the sheriff's office also to come look. They were also interested in similar packages, and we had members of IT showing up. So after making those site visits, full day visits at these other law enforcement agencies around the state, we all met together. We came up with a little ranking system. We went over our different site visits, and we documented all those visits and all that ranking. And it was a unanimous decision by the officers, by the IT staff, by the records personnel, that SunGuard would fit our needs the best. They were currently in the country where their software package is. That seems to be the most copacetic for the type of operations that we have here in South Carolina. Another advantage is that they're also in Lexington County, so in Joanne County, Aiken County, they use SunGuard, and then over at Columbia County, Georgia, they also use the same software package. So one of the big advantages of a company like that is there's immediate sharing of data between the police agencies. So that helps with crime analysis, it helps with solving crimes, and it helps with sharing of reports that need to be written. So that's a big part of it as well. So we started negotiations with SunGuard in July, and the solution they provide us is within the budget that you've appropriated for us. And if there's any other questions, we're happy to answer those, but I think a lot of that's detailed in your packet that you have in front of you.
I have a couple of questions. You talked about sharing with other people that are using the same system, but the sheriff is not. So will you be able to interface with the sheriff?
They don't have the funding that we have. We have included them on every step of the process, and they're also looking to upgrade to a new software package. I hope dearly that they will consider doing that when they get their funding. But we've included them. They can't say they will because they don't have the funding, but my understanding is their intention is to look heavily at coming on board with us with the package we have.
And don't, what are the effects? Do we know?
We're currently not interfaced with them now, so we know.
Oh, you're not interfaced with them now?
No, sir.
Okay. And bottom line, what does this do? I mean, you're taking all the incident reports, all the...
It's the entire software suite. So CAD, computer-aided dispatch, as the call comes in, it's entered there, transmittal out to the car, to the officers, the mobile data terminals in the car, writing of incident reports and submittal to the RMS, records management system, personnel, evidence storage, case management, training, all those things are documented in packages. It's the entire software suite at the public safety department.
Are you able to identify the whereabouts of the vehicles on patrol?
Yeah, this package will include the GPS. The current package we have does not, but you'll have this both in the dispatch center and in the car. They'll have access to vehicle locators.
And what kind of reports are you able to furnish to council, assuming we ask them? For example, I like to get reports of incidents in my district. I don't get them all, but I get most of what I need. Is that going to be facilitated by this software?
Yes. SunGuard has two packages. We've had them. They're included in this. It's a module included. One's P2P, police-to-police sharing, and that's included with sharing with the other agencies. The other is P2C, police-to-citizen sharing. And we purchased that module, or that's included in their proposal. Now, there have to be some checks and acceptances to allow that to go out to the public, because there are certain cases you would not want the public to see, victims of violent crimes, victims of sexual assaults, things like that. But yes, most of the incident reports that are currently sitting in the incident report book at headquarters for public review will be available online on a website you'd be able to go to as part of this package.
So does that mean the Aiken Standard won't have to go to the lobby of the police station every day to check?
That's correct. They'll have access to it that way. I would imagine they'll still have their reporter come up to headquarters for additional information. But yes,
if they have access, do we have access to it?
You have access to all the public record incident reports that you currently could get from coming up to headquarters.
Okay, thank you.
Well, is this hardware and software we're talking about?
Mm-hmm. It is hardware and software. You want to comment on that?
We would have to. As he mentioned, we've had this software solution in place for a number of years, the one we're currently using. and we were faced with end of life of the current hardware and the software, so we had to make a decision either way. And this solution gives us some very powerful options. We're going to be getting a couple of additional servers, physical servers. We're going to virtualize that, and then we're also going to expand the communications from those servers to the cars. So it's going to give us some really good capabilities.
And if there's any user guide that is not too detailed, we'll have to look at it.
Maintenance cost as detailed in the cover memo, that's what we currently pay with our current system. Over the next 5 years, our maintenance costs will range between $95,700 and $99,153, whereas over the last 5 years with our existing system, those costs have ranged from $97,900 up to this year, $121,000. So there'll be, I guess, some savings over the next 5 years in our annual software maintenance.
You guys have done a great job. Sorry we sorry it took us so long to support you.
Absolutely. Good job.
A couple of questions in relation to the future. Is this put on a depreciation schedule so this won't happen again? Or how do we manage something that's so far out of date? And is this, $300,000 or $400,000, is that put on a depreciation schedule so that in 10 years we get a new, we have money for a new one? Or how are we going to manage the future? Because these aren't going to get cheaper, and they're going to change faster.
Yeah, the software is by far the most expensive part of the project, and the annual maintenance with SunGuard includes the upgrades to the software package. The hardware is that need to be put on the some type of depreciation.
Are we going to... And I don't know in the government side, but I would think that this is the value of this, and if you throw in the maintenance of it, you're pushing $700,000, and I would think that ought to be on depreciation.
I will certainly work with the chief and finance director Abney and other staff.
That's important to do that. I don't think it's been on that so far, has it? It's not on depreciation schedule now that I'm aware of.
It's hard to say because the software package we use at Public Safety now is on this big mainframe. So the mainframe is run by the IT department, But now we're talking about a set of virtual servers, which are very different type of software packages.
I probably shouldn't ask that question because then my next question would be, where's the money? But I won't go there. The other thing I think is important, the computer or the communicator PC with this is also an expensive item that when you add, how many of them do you have, Phil? You and I talked
60
of them?
60 in the patrol cars.
You got 60 of them and they run about $5,000 a piece.
Correct.
I think that ought to be a depreciation problem too, $300,000 on that over if you depreciate them over 10 years or 15 years, whatever the life of them is. There's nothing cheap about this, and we need to keep up to date. So I think the city manager should look into how do we replace these. At some point, they have a useful life also.
Why 60? Don't we have 12 per shift?
There's 60 patrol vehicles that are used for the patrol function.
Even though we only have 48 assigned to the shifts?
Yeah, that includes the community services division. School resource officers, all those are included in the patrol function.
Okay.
Do you need a motion from there?
I so move.
Yes, we do.
Second.
Okay. All right. Any other discussion?
I simply want to compliment Phil Keston during a very tedious conversation about public safety and technology. He used the word copacetic, so I want to compliment him for working that in there.
Very good. Thank you. Show of hands, please, all in favor. Passes unanimously. Okay, thank you. Thank all of you. The whole team. Okay, under petitions and requests to unfreeze positions.
Mr. Mayor, as you know, that when the council approved the 14-15 budget, one of the conditions was the freezing of all existing and proposed positions. To unfreeze these positions, department heads routinely come forward to ask for your request. We have five positions for council consideration this evening. They're in the public services department. As you can see, through openings and through retirement, Tim Coakley has really been in a difficult situation. We continue to push his department to do more and more work, cutting grass and doing other work or whatever, but he simply doesn't have the manpower that has been authorized, so that is why this request is before you. And Tim's here to answer any questions you might have.
Okay, thank you, sir. Do we have a motion and a second for approval?
So moved. I second.
Okay. Any discussion? Not show hands, please. All in favor? Passes unanimously. Okay. Item two. Request council review of business vitality manager job description.
Mr. Mayor, as you will recall, this position was included in this present year's budget submission under the Economic Reinvestment Fund. This evening, we request your approval of the business staff person that, as I say, you approved the funding for several months ago. I have drafted a job description for your consideration after consulting with staff members and members of our business community. Initially, I want to thank folks like Dave Jamison, Will Williams, Avery Spears Mahoney, and others for their insights and input on the issue of the relationship between the city and the business community. I believe that the filling of this position will be the first step in restoring and or creating an environment that fosters a planned, healthy business climate in our city. In terms of defining this position, let me first suggest what this position is not. This is not a quick fix, for our challenges are deep and ingrained and involve a culture which has evolved over decades and which includes many processes, procedures, rules, and regulations that need to be reviewed, evaluated, and approved upon. It is not a position designed to duplicate existing positions, programs, roles, and responsibilities. There are many entities involved in the process of business development, whether it be our chamber, the ADDA, the Aiken Corporation, the Economic Development Partnership, our friends at the county with their tourism efforts, the University of South Carolina's Business Development Center, to name but a few. The role and responsibility of this position must complement, not duplicate, any of the existing efforts. And this position isn't in and of itself a panacea to what ails us. Filling this position will give us a staff advocate where none presently exists. We unfortunately have numerous examples just recently where that presence, that voice, that advocacy could have really made a difference to more than a few hoping to do business in this city. And we actually have some who are present this evening that are going through this process. One in particular that I took some time out today to hear their story. And the fact is, without being critical of any one person or of the city in its entirety, there is a large room for improvement on the way we relate to our business community. We also have an outdated and ineffective skeleton or structure and no business master plan, and we must foster a renewed effort to create a forward-thinking and effective business development plan for the city. So what are the benefits of this position? Creating this position brings a new face, a new philosophy to city government, an actual person that demonstrates on a daily basis that city government is not only here to serve our residential community, but our business community as well. This position will be a staff person that understands that we also must honor and cherish that which is uniquely special about this unique city, and a person who will bring various interest groups and beliefs together. We need forums so that the business advocates in our city can meet with those interested in historic preservation or those concerned with change, allowing for the proper airing of concerns with a goal of looking for common ground. The person will evaluate our present laws, rules, regulations, ordinances, tax structure, and city government operations, and answer directly to me and to you as our city council, offering changes and improvements in what we do and what we don't do. I have included, as I said, the sample job description for your review and comment. person is supposed to manage the day-to-day operations of our city's economic development program while helping to grow the city of Aiken's economy. The essential functions are listed in the job description as well. As you know, I've been here for over 100 days now, and I cannot more forcefully advocate for the need for this position and for all of us to reflect on what our relationship is with the business community. The one example that I found out about today is a business that is the perfect business that we should be supporting. Young folks are trying to create and open up a business that happens to be in the arts, which is something else we should be really supporting. And so for the pain and the experiences that she and others have faced, I think all of us can learn a lesson that we need a system that offers some flexibility while honoring that which makes this place so very special. There is no face that is an advocate in our entire organization right now, and we need to change that. And I think we can do that by adopting this job description and moving forward to adopting or hiring a business vitality manager. If nothing else, right out of the box, it'll send a different message to our business community than they've heard over the past months and years. It's a first step. It's not going to change the system overnight, but it's a start. And I would ask humbly for your support and approval of this position this evening.
Thank you, sir.
Okay.
I have one comment.
I think Audrey has a question.
Yes, certainly may.
I don't know, some of you might know me. My name is Andrea McCullough. I just purchased the old Kramer Feed and Seed building, and this is the first time I've addressed you guys happily. I've been working, and it's something I can't do in a certain suit and tie. I just want to thank you, John, for, I don't know who started this idea to have this position available to people like me. You can tell how I'm dressed right now, that I don't have time to play the 30 different roles it takes to just be a residential homeowner. I'm doing that and 1,000 other things. And to have somebody who is kind of the glue between me and you guys is so important. I wish I could apply, and I was looking at the qualifications, and I'm pretty sure I actually am qualified to do so. So if you want to hire me, I'm thinking, I mean, ask away. But that is really important. I come from a family of entrepreneurs, and I understand the importance of HR and PR, and that is something that people take lightly, and they don't think it's a really important job. But I have had numerous issues and problems. I'm not saying names or pointing at certain departments. You guys were a nice rock in my shoe at one time, but I got over it and I moved on, and I've been able to succeed from here on out, and this is only going to continue to help me to succeed, and I don't know anybody who would be opposed to it. I don't know if there is an opposition, but I'm just here to support that. And there's been a lot of people on my side, and it's important for Aiken to have. Maybe it's time for us to put importance on small businesses instead of the residents here. And if we have a lot of residents, they're going to stay here, I mean, for a while, but let's keep them here, and let's bring more people in. So that's my thing. So if there's any questions on my behalf. Oh, by the way, guys, I'm doing great. I'm busy all the time, and I'm constantly dirty. And hopefully I should be open up around Christmas if I can get this done with a few people's help. So please drive by 247 Marble Street. So.
Glad to have you.
Thank you. Thank you very much.
And I think you should apply for that job.
She sounds like she's too busy.
HR person is right back there.
Okay.
We've got a motion and a second.
One question or comment. Since we're kind of an offhand kind of, since we're just starting into this, you reckon this ought to be a contracted position for the first year or two till we can ease into this? Or is it appropriate to go ahead and hire somebody full-time?
I can hire somebody.
I think he needs to report, he or she needs to report to John.
I didn't say that. I said, how do you hire the person, either as a contractor or a full-time city employee?
I'm sorry. It was a question. I was too excited to know that this is happening to ask this. I do have questions. I don't know who is involved in what you were just saying. How do you go about hiring somebody like this? How do you go about hiring? And if you don't know, people like me, we have ways, a little bit more of a blue-collar way, I guess, to do it than what you guys might have access to. I don't mean to be judgmental, but how are you guys going to go about finding somebody that's going to fit this description, not just collegiately, not... What are you going to do to guarantee that this person is going to be right for the job? And I don't mean anything, but I don't think there's any of you guys on this panel that would be fit for it. Because you're at a different level. I don't mean to be rude, but it's just not. You guys are here for a certain reason. This takes a whole different thing.
Personality.
It's not this.
Unique person.
It's not this, and I actually am. How are you going to do that? How are you going to... Is there an answer?
Yes, we're going to advertise through the traditional channels, obviously, which would include local press, trade associations. We will work with business groups and whatever. If Alicia will just raise her hand so that you can see who she is, she will be involved with dissemination of the advertisement. So if you know of any trade groups that might be helpful to us, if you could just pass that on to Alicia.
What about SCORE? Is SCORE involved at all? I don't know.
I will be putting together a group which will, in fact, have at least one member, local member of SCORE, okay, and other business groups represented on the selection committee.
And a request, possibly, would be, because there's nothing that's been in the comprehensive plan that I know now very well, anything really about the arts that we were talking about, what would be part of the job description that they would have to address, if this has been a job description like nothing else, there's no other job description right now that is holding that responsibility of being able to keep this community together that way. We're not only equine, but equine is an art. It is a sport, it's an art, and it's... So I would suggest that somebody would at least have a little bit of an art background. It would create a little bit more of a liberal stance that they would take instead of a conservative. And this isn't, I don't think, really about money. And it would give the city way more money if we had the resources. If I didn't have to keep coming here all the time, and I'm serious, if I didn't have to keep coming here and I could go to somebody's office that was my cheerleader, and then I could get answers from them instead of keep being denied because I'm not as important as the person's office that I'm about to go to upstairs or downstairs or across the street, that's important. And then I end up going, screw it, fine, I'm just going to do it my way. I would rather just do it and then ask for forgiveness later. That's not how it should be. I want to be in compliance, and I want everybody to be happy about it. Not because they're bored. I mean, that's how we see it. I mean, you wonder why all the small businesses fail here. It's too hard to continue a business here, a small business. And that's what I'm trying to do. So I would love to be involved and continually involved in how are you guys going to choose this person, because this isn't a normal job. This is actually pretty tough. And I'm almost thinking there might have to be a team, two or three. Whiskey Road's obviously been a little bit too developed, I think, for any small business person's liking, so it'd be a downtown development sort of thing. I would just like for everybody to be able to know how to reach that sort of resource. I mean, this is a big job. This isn't...
Adria.
Yes.
I think you know what we're looking for.
Okay.
Thank you.
I mean, I'm just nervous, but thank you. I appreciate it.
All right.
It.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
But if we form a search committee, we'd like for you to be a part of it.
Thank you.
Just picking up a little bit from what Andrea was saying, this is a, there's a need for a level of expertise and a person of a certain personality type, and I do think that particular type of individual, who we hope will come in and, you know, be a rock star, but that particular type of individual is going to be looking for a permanent full-time position. To go back to Mr. Ebner's question, I think if we posted this as merely a contract job that was only for a year or two, we might not really get the same quality of applicant that we would if it was a full-time job. So, because I do think Andrea is right that we're looking for and pray that we find the right folks or person or persons for this work, I think our odds are better if it's a full-time job.
I think we've got a city manager that's quite capable.
Mm-hmm. She is. Selected.
Of determining who ought to be this person once he finishes his, let's see.
And let me just add, when Andre approached me on Saturday, and I text our city manager, who quickly open the doors, but his doors are always open for anyone that wants to come in. And these concerns have come to the city manager almost weekly. And my thoughts and concerns go out to Stuart and to John, because they have spent a lot of time with people coming in with the kinds of problems that Andrea has indicated that she's facing. It's just in multiple ways that folks have come in. And it's about our process. And they want to do business here. They love Aiken. They want to stay here. But help, they're asking us to make it easier for them and the advocate as well. And so John, I think, is very capable of selecting the right person for the position.
Okay, we've got a motion and a second. Show of hands, please, all in favor. Passes unanimously. Item 3, City Council review of parks, recreation, tourism projects funded by hospitality tax.
Mr. Mayor, as you will recall, we made a commitment to you to appear before you to ask for additional approval outside of the approval that we initially received in the budget for projects being funded by the hospitality tax and or the economic reinvestment tax. This evening we have a group of PRT projects that we're ready to put out to bid, with one exception, and that is a request to allow us to implement the recommendations of the recently completed parking plan that mentions some items of restriping other recommendations that are in the parking study. So we're asking for consideration to allow us to use hospitality tax monies for that purpose as well. Our PRT director, Jessica Campbell, is here with her staff to answer any questions that you might have about the individual projects. But I think every one of these were listed in the initial budget that went before you. But before we spend any money, we wanted to come back as promised to allow you to review the list.
You need a motion to do this?
Any discussion?
I so move. Both items, the pricing and items that city manager brought up, as well as the Parks and Recreation director, we approved. And also, we watch our cash flow on the income versus outflow. So move.
Second. Okay. Motion second.
I got a little slight comment, which is tangential to this, with events coming to town. I got several emails from some of the people that were vendors, actually local people that had kiosks during the Aiken and Macon. And they were a little bit concerned about the 3 or 4 inches of water that kind of stayed, on a road, which limited access to certain kiosks. But basically, the porous concrete that we were sold some time ago apparently is not working well. and sweeping doesn't help because it just crams more stuff into the crevices. And one of the observations was that possibly a curb cut would allow some of the water to escape into the
grassy
area, if you will. Of course, then you'd grow mosquitoes, but that's beside the point. But it's something you should look at, because, I mean, basically, a couple of local churches were looking to make some money for their missionary effort, and it just kind of went by the wayside. They figured they lost $400 or $500 in their revenue.
I think there is a time that what used to work well, and you keep getting little pieces of this, that, and the other thing in there, mm-hmm. it has to be cleaned out. And we need to look at that. I do remember well that that needs to be done on some frequency, well, when it's needed.
Yeah, well, they're supposed to be, that pervious asphalt is supposed to be vacuumed, I heard, twice a year or at least once a year. And these guys, the experts, can tell us better.
Ever been done. Right.
My understanding is, I was talking to one of our engineers, sweeping over it actually aggravates the situation because it just introduces more dust and road waste and what have you into the openings.
I actually spent about 3 hours today looking into those complaints and walking along Park, and the issues with the pervious pavement, you know, are, as you described. We actually took the jet truck and ran some water just to kind of observe how quickly it was going in. And I think what I want to do is the Clemson expert that came out and helped, and I've seen him at different...
Gene Eisen
is actually another colleague of his that kind of has worked on that. And I want him to come out and actually evaluate our those pavements. To confirm that they were constructed correctly, to confirm that, you know, if there is a issue with the maintenance of it and the vacuuming of it, then, you know, to take the recommendations and try and make an improvement. Because the other aspect of it is we've been working with the state to help unclog some of the drains, because there's really two aspects. You still have the drains that should be removing the water in addition to the pervious pavement, you know, taking the water away from the surface. And you've created a pretty big reservoir of water that allows, you know, all of this to soak in and so on and so forth. So it's obviously not working as it maybe did when it first was, so we need to investigate it. But that'll be a fairly significant effort to get the right people to come look. I do know that the vacuum systems, the sweepers that we have, are not the right type. They need to be vacuumed. These are Venturi vacuums. They're good for blowing dust and leaves, but they aren't good for pervious pavement. So that'll be another evaluation, and we'll come up with a recommendation.
If I can recall, when we did that, I specifically asked the project manager or the Clemson individuals about what about these things that are going to get clogged up, and he maintained that that's not going to be a problem. The second thing is we were going to be a showcase for the world on using pervious concrete. I'd be curious to see if Clemson had followed up with any other localities that are using the same thing. Are they running into the same problem? I think that should be part of that study that we paid for, a year and a half ago.
Well, it's not part of that. It maybe should have been, but...
well, somehow or another, I mean, they said it was going to be a world-renowned effort, and people are going to copy us left and right. Mm-hmm. I'm kind of curious to see where their statements are today.
Mm-hmm. When we were evaluating pervious pavements for, like, the alley and that sort of thing, and our conclusion was that the brick was going to be better because of the perceived maintenance mm-hmm. issues with any of these other pervious systems.
Okay. Thank you.
Thanks, George. We need to get back to this issue. Do we have a motion and a second to approve this?
We do.
Okay. Do we have it already?
Yes.
Okay. Who was it?
I made the motion. Somebody second it.
Who was second?
I can second it.
Okay. Any discussion? Show of hands, please. All in favor. Passes unanimously. Okay. Very good. That's it.
I got one question on the attachments. I asked Ms. Sarah to show page 204, which is in our packet today. 204 is about meetings, and the back of that is about executive sessions. And since Mr. O'Brien brought it up, I think it would be good, since there's a new Supreme Court ruling, if you review this with us at the next meeting.
Okay.
The last paragraph on the other page gets to be very important from what Mr. O'Brien was saying. It kind of hits the middle of the road, what he says and what we do. So if you would do that, it's on page 204 and 205 of today's agenda.
Okay.
So if that'll be an agenda item, I'd appreciate it, Mr. City Manager.
Okay. We're adjourned.